Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. We are going to be talking today about censorship and how we may actually be, you know, free of it at some point soon. So let's see here. I am going to just see if I can contact Elizabeth, see if she's ready. Okay. Okay, so we'll be talking mostly about censorship, probably a little bit about the Pelosi thing. I think that stinks, smells a little fishy, with a hint of vodka. I think this is a setup. I think this is a ploy for pity. They're going to lose. The Democrats are going to lose. And this is just really their last-ditch effort to get people to feel sorry for them, to vote for them, to make the Republicans seem like mean, you know, dirty, you know, January 6th attackers, you know. So that's really what I'm thinking is going on with that. But, Elizabeth is with us. There we go.
Well, hey.
Hello.
Happy Sunday. I'm not celebrating Halloween, you little demonic children out there. So. No, I don't. Never.
We're
really
basically
have.
In it for the candy.
And, you know, we get candy all year round. We did pumpkin seeds and the carving. And we try to make it innocuous away from the demonic, but it's the more you know about it, it's like, God, we really shouldn't even be doing that. But the kids love the pumpkin seeds, so we do that.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm not. And I have a friend who's in, I mean, it's like, it is the headbangers' decadent, funnest day of the week where people go to the Barbies and dress up. It's like, my God, you know, they didn't grow up, they grew into a whole different animal of some sort. And I'm like, So I don't know. I look at it as a nice little way to, relax, but okay, here's my thoughts I had today. Was like, I saw so many different people's take on it, and it's cute and whatnot. And when I was a kid in the 70s, we couldn't even really eat the candy that we had, all an entire pillowcase full of candy that our parents were like, gosh, no, we can't let you eat it, because, you know, you had the razor blades in the apple, you had the urban folklore legends, you know, and then someone actually knew somebody who had they were the popcorn balls, and they were someone's, you know, grandma made them, and it's cheap and it's nice and it looks, but there was a razor blade in one of those, or pins.
What? I think that's a myth. Come on, that didn't really happen, did it?
Well, you know what? The story got out there, and it was like, okay, that was like, you can't eat anything that didn't come from the store. And then, you know, segue to now where it's like, my God, you've got fentanyl that looks like Skittles and wrapped in all kinds of whatever, and gummy bears that look like, you know, fun things to eat. And I'm like, I don't think, if I had kids, I'd do exactly like my sister does. They have a little neighborhood party at one person's house, and you know exactly what your kids are getting. There would be no going out and begging from strangers for candy. And what popped through my head now is, you know, we're living in like a crazy Mad Max crazy town right now. The things that are going on in my little community, it's like, don't even want to go out of the house. It's insane. But I'm thinking, it's dangerous to open your door. You don't know who you're opening your door to. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'd participate. Even if I was not inclined to want to stay away from any and all things that has to do with dark, demonic spirits. I'm just kind of like one of those people that don't. I just say, hey, it's good for you, but not for me. It doesn't come in my house.
Yeah, well, I have kids too, you know, so I guess it's a little bit different when you've got kids in the game than not. But
right.
You know, and the kids are just—they get all creative with their costumes. You know, Ava is dressed up as Santa Claus and carrying around an Easter basket and telling people Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to my sister, and out of her mouth comes, do not inflate that dinosaur in your bedroom again this year.
our kids were that a couple years ago.
Yeah, so, you know, they make it fun, but they try to stay far away from the bad spirit side, you know. So, yeah, they do the bunny rabbits and the dinosaurs and things like that. And you can't take everything away from kids. Once they're aware of things that go on and that are fun, try to customize them to your principles and to good ways, you know, and give them extra fun. If you're trying to take one thing away from them, give them seven things that are better, is how I look at it if I had kids on that side. But, yeah, I'm always kind of late to the show, so I didn't get your green room itinerary, what you wanted to talk about. I have a million things on my mind, but what was your little...
Well, I definitely want to talk about censorship and Twitter. That's number one for me. I want to talk a little bit about the Nancy Pelosi or Paul Pelosi thing, because things just aren't adding up, you know? And I really do think that they're trying... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it has become, and I, you know, in order to get my my percentage of the royalties, I watched CNN, and I was like, oh my, because I looked, I'm like, now we're a current event show. I should at least know what's going on. Pop it on, and they are actually running defense to everything that's out there on Twitter. Because that popped on Twitter, it is a. It's not that they're roasting him alive, because that's what I equated it to. This is a friend of mine. But the amount of information about his life and his going on to, you know, going to gay clubs by himself in the town he lives in. And it made me think, I'm like, you know what? Here's all these people who insist upon having full transparency and everyone can be whoever they want, and encouraging to teach our children to be sexual creatures, be it you know, an indigo bunny rabbit or whatever it may be. If they themselves have a proclivity to perhaps not be living the straight and narrow life, they hide it. In this day and age, it would be like, that should be a campaign plug for her. Her husband's actually gay, but he's going around hiding it. And everybody seems to know his private life that no one talks about. And that got out on Twitter. And now today, they're running defense smoke screens on CNN. That's a story on CNN, is that the disinformation program that's going on against poor Paul Pelosi on Twitter. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Are they scared to death the truth is coming out? And yes, they are. So that, I think that's a huge story, because I just saw it on CNN. And I thought, methinks thou dost protest too much, to quote Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I think that's an interesting one.
Yeah, I did see a CNN article that said that the attacker, they found zip ties on him. And it's like, and of course, those are like these key words that they put out, like the January 6th people, they had zip ties. You know, like that's what they're saying.
All the police should have zip ties. Are they really zip ties, or were they, you know, fur-lined handcuffs, you know? Silk and leather bondage, you know. What was he doing with his overnight case? Why were they both naked in the middle of the night? That it was a lover's quarrel. There's so many antidotes, really kind of the behind the scenes. Why did the call was basically a wellness call. Can you check on him? So it's kind of, I'm like, this could be political assassination, which, you know, the other thing, they just were spending, you know, 25 minutes lamenting the fact that our country is not very nice and our politicians aren't very nice people because nobody rallied around poor Nancy Pelosi. Someone almost made a joke about her on the campaign trail. And I thought to myself, that's what you call karma. You know, I can only remember her standing up, jumping up and down with her fists in the air, screaming for the right to kill our babies. Now we're supposed to keep her feelings in our thoughts and prayers. And kind of,
exactly. What? The other, like, really fishy thing about this that I've heard in more than one places, then the media say that this is an anti-Semitic attack. And of course, because of things that Kanye said, right now, anti-Semitic is in everybody's mind, just like zip ties were, you know, with the January 6th thing. They're Catholic. They're Catholic.
Yeah.
They're not Jewish. You can't just say that. You can't accuse somebody of having been attacked anti-Semitically. When they're not Jewish, people do realize that, right? That anti-Semitic means you're Jewish.
They don't. You know, there was another. There seems to be a big theme. There's a theme on the news. Somebody was talking about, you know, whoever's running the show, whoever's trying to manipulate us, because you turn any of these, it's like watching cartoons, and it's like these are not real. I can't even take them seriously because they don't even act like humans. They're just cartoon characters and hyperspasmatic and hyperbolic overreaction. It's like, wow. That it's being driven by AI, and the AI program that's running everything doesn't quite get it. So the program will change in a blink. Like the monkeypox didn't work. All of a sudden they had to switch gears and go someplace else. They're trying to do this, you know, get your catchwords, the Jewish anti-Semitic. And there was another blur at some sports arena. Kanye, what Kanye said about the Jews is true. Something. And that's like, that was just the most sickest, this is a quote by the CNN. This is sick. This is disgusting. This is anti-Semitism at its worst. Like, did you ever watch
exactly
Schindler's List at all? Because that's not anti. That's a quote. That's a statement. It's not anti-Semitism. It's not even reflecting
exactly.
Poorly upon the Jews. You know, what was it that he said about the Jews?
That they rule the world or something like that. That they're evil.
They've been saying that for years. They have been saying that since time immemorial, that they are in control of the banks and everything. The power, they're the power brokers, is what they call them. And it's simply, this depends upon the land of jealous that they're in, that gets turned into whatever. But it's what they said was, but they never call us liars for saying this. They just call us anti-Semites. And it's like, well, you know, they want to get everyone whipped up into me.
Right,
this
and we're racist,
was,
and we're homophobic, and we're,
yes.
You know, anti-Semitic, and transphobic, mm-hmm. And all of these just, like, it's so stupid, because when people actually are these things, these words are going to be meaningless, you know, because they overuse them on people who aren't these things.
Well, I hate to tell you, but they didn't have those words when I was a kid, so we don't even know what they mean. It's like, just they're pulling this misogynistic, transparent whatever out of their ass, and it's like, what are you trying to tell us? You know, you're only impressing yourself and making everyone else wonder, oh my goodness, that sounds horrible. That's horrible. I still don't know what a misogynist whatever is. And I'm like, you know, it's a word we never had in the 70s, so go away with this stuff. And I'm watching the 25 minutes of CNN. And I was going to pull up the movie clip from, and I don't know if it was from Airplane, but with Leslie Nielsen, he did a few different kinds of real satirical movies in the 70s or 80s. And there was one part where he's getting slapped, or he's slapping someone. He's like, you love me, you hate me, you love me, you hate me. And it's playing the good cop, the bad cop. And that's kind of how I felt after watching CNN, because it got to be such back and forth, making, you know, trying to pull my outrage and my, but my thoughts are like, this doesn't make sense. You're an idiot, I'm thinking. And then I got lost in this word salad of, you know, kumbaya shit that they always talk about. And it's kind of like they got me in where I was subdued into this, I'm listening and I'm not reacting to the news anymore. And that's what they got going. And it's just to manipulate us. And if they can't manipulate us and control us with their new catchphrases, like this anti-Semitic Jew story that now is everywhere, where you'd have school shootings and now it's picnic shootings and parade shootings. And, you know, I'm surprised he wasn't attacked with an assault weapon, for God's sakes. A hammer? That doesn't
right, exactly. I think Lily's with us, too. Let's see. Hold on. Hello?
Oh. Hey. Welcome.
Hello,
welcome
beautiful
aboard.
People.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I think it's Lily, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm driving, so if I sound muffled or anything, it's just my car.
You're worried.
Girl.
Where in the world are you?
I am still in Nebraska. I've got to renovate this RV a little bit. Like, there's nothing in it. It's totally gutted, which is perfect. But, you know, like, we don't have any, like, where to sleep yet.
Oh, gotcha.
So I'm going to, on Tuesday, I'll be able to start renovating it, and it'll be done pretty quickly.
Well, yay. Awesome.
Cool.
Oh, she's got her hand up now. Hold on. Let's bring mom in.
Good afternoon,
ladies. I'm just listening for right now. Wanted to say hello to everybody.
Well,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. How are you?
Yes, we can.
I'm blessed. Thank you. Yes, I'm doing well. I'm actually just teeing up all my little stories. So I'll listen for now. Got a ton about the Paul Pelosi story. It's a lot of fun.
Isn't
I have.
It?
Yeah.
Oh, you racist.
So much fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You crazy QAnon person. Where I'm going to start is talking about this QAnon. Anyway, go ahead. Take yourself through what you're going through, Lily. It's good to talk to you. I want to tell you how jealous I am of you having an RV, driving around the country. That's my dream. So. Anyway, I will.
Hey, we could create a whole caravan situation, Carla. We could just be like a traveling caravan crew and like just like, you know, help people grow food and teach sovereignty and do all the things on our way. It would be pretty cool.
I would love to.
Okay, if you guys don't mind.
We got to figure out how to
like
bring the chickens,
play.
Though.
I know. How are we going to bring the chickens? So I'm going to mute myself while I arrange the stories for this afternoon, and I look forward to coming back on in just a little bit.
Awesome.
Okay, very good.
We'll
I'm going to play a quick video here on Tucker Carlson's take on Elon Musk owning Twitter now and possibly monologue ever.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. The Babylon Bee is one of the last English language satire sites left on the internet. And no, we're not counting the Daily Beast or the Atlantic Magazine, neither of which makes people laugh on purpose. The Babylon Bee, by contrast, is intentionally amusing and it succeeds, mostly because it is sharp and it's honest. This March, the site published a piece with the headline, "The Babylon Bee's Man of the Year is Rachel Levine." The article was funny because it pointed out that Rachel Levine is himself pretty funny. Here you have a man dressed up like a woman in makeup and purple glasses, wearing some kind of admiral's uniform, pretending to be the assistant secretary of health when he looks like a candidate for an imminent heart attack himself. So the whole outfit is a riot. It's like a Halloween costume some clever drunk college student dreamed up. This year I'm going as an obese transvestite health admiral. You'd laugh if you saw him at a party. But the Biden administration can't allow you to laugh at Rachel Levine or at Karine Jean-Pierre or Kamala Harris or any of the other transparently absurd figures that are pretending are running our country, or for that matter, at Biden himself, who somehow they tell you got, quote, 81 million votes despite being senile and rarely going outside. It's all pretty funny when you think about it, but you can't laugh. And you can't laugh because humor is the most subversive thing. Once you start noticing the pure hilarious ridiculousness of the people in charge, you may be much less likely to obey them. So it's absolutely vital that somebody wipe that smirk off your face by force if necessary. So Twitter immediately banned the Babylon Bee from its site for the crime of making fun of Rachel Levine. So you've heard that story. You've heard other stories like it. But here's what's interesting about this one. Elon Musk, wherever he was at the time, noticed this happening. And he was appalled. He wasn't appalled because he's an ideological conservative. Musk is the richest man in the world, and he didn't get that way by being a right-wing political activist. He's a business guy. To the extent Musk has politics, they seem to be traditional civil liberties-oriented liberal. But banning a comedy site for mocking someone in power? That seemed totalitarian to Elon Musk. So Musk called the head of the Babylon Bee, Seth Dillon, and told him that he, quote, might need to buy Twitter. And he wasn't kidding. Yesterday, after months of legal drama, Musk did that. The bird is freed, he tweeted. Then he fired several of the company's top executives, including its CEO, Parag Agarwal. Within hours, he pledged to let people laugh online if they wanted, to let people who've been excluded from our public conversation speak, lifting the bans on the banned commentators on Twitter. That would include presumably Donald Trump, the former president, Project Veritas, a group of journalists, Alex Jones, and many thousands of others. Then Musk promised to make Twitter's algorithm transparent. What is Twitter's algorithm exactly? Well, we don't have any real idea because no one's seen it. We will now. Twitter will no longer be a publicly held company. It'll be a privately held company. And Musk has said he will show us exactly how it works. Apparently, the algorithm has effectively existed to censor conservatives on the basis of their political views. So now, in one day, people who could not speak will be allowed to speak. The playing field will be transparent, which is a prerequisite for fairness. And if you want to laugh on social media, you can. It seems like a big day. This seems like good news. And if your job was to defend freedom of the press, and it is the job of journalists to defend freedom of the press because they rely on it, you'd think you'd be pretty excited about this. Oh, but they're not excited. Instead, journalists are panicked by this development. Watch.
I think he's a jerk. I think that he's cavalier. I think there's something dangerous when the richest guy in the world controls one of the most important political social platforms in the world. I think just as a guy who ran a business, you come in business and to fire the people before you even sit down with them, mm-hmm. just shows a cavalier recklessness. He reminds me of a Bond villain. As I said, when the richest guy in the world buys a social media platform, it's just not a good equation. I think he's a dangerous fellow.
It's scary when rich people own media companies, says Donnie Deutsch, who inherited a media company from his own rich father. But he doesn't mean it. There's no principle here. No one at MSNBC means it. How do you know that? Because they're not complaining about, say, MSNBC's corporate owners, its billionaire owners at Comcast. They're not upset about the fact that Jeff Bezos, probably the second richest man in the world, owns the hometown newspaper of the government, the Washington Post. The Washington Post, owned by another billionaire, just published a tweet telling users how they can crush Twitter now that Elon Musk owns it. Quote, if you do only one thing, the Post wrote, lock down your ad settings on Twitter. Starve them out. The Washington Post reporters are also panicked that free speech might be back on Twitter. Taylor Lorenz, one of their most famous and thoroughly ridiculous reporters, had a particularly rough night. Quote, it's like the gates of hell opened on the site tonight, she wrote. The gates of hell. People in the media, you may have noticed, spend their entire lives online. No, the gates of hell open when we run out of diesel fuel and the airlines don't work and people freeze to death. The gates of hell don't open when people get to say what they want on social media. Sorry, get some perspective, honey. But none of them have perspective. It is sad, responded Frank Shaw, who works at the head of communications at Microsoft. Lorenz was upset because she makes her living by defaming people and then harassing them personally. But until last night, Twitter protected her and many journalists like her from any criticism whatsoever. Here was Vijaya Gadde, who is the chief censor at Twitter, the head lawyer, explaining why Twitter bans anyone who mocks journalists, because it's dangerous to mock journalists. Watch.
We were trying to understand the context of what was going on and take action on them. Because, again, I don't know, Joe, if you've ever been the target of a dogpiling event on Twitter, but it is not particularly fun when thousands of people or hundreds of people are tweeting at mm-hmm. you and saying things. And that can be viewed as a form of harassment. It's not about the individual's tweet. It is about the volume of things that are being directed at
you.
No,
I understand.
And so in that particular case, we made the judgment call, and it is a judgment call, to take down the tweets that were responding directly to these journalists that were saying, learn to code, even if they didn't have a wish of harm specifically attached to them because of what we viewed as coordinated attempt to harass them.
See how this works? So when you're a journalist, you can destroy people's lives in this country on behalf of a political party. You can totally crush them, get them fired from their jobs, attack them to the point they literally lose custody of their children, which has happened, is happening now, by the way. You can do whatever you want if you're a journalist, but if anyone criticizes you, they have to be shut down because their criticism is violence. In this case, Twitter objected to the phrase, learn to code. Now, that's a phrase specifically used to mock journalists, because that's what journalists told coal miners to do when they lost their jobs. Learn to code. It's not a threat in any way. It's not violence. It's a joke. But until last night, you couldn't say it on Twitter. Of course, you could aim it downward. You could still tell coal miners to learn to code. But you couldn't tell people with power to learn to code. That's the point. When you eliminate free speech, who do you help? The people in charge. Only the powerful benefit from censorship. The editor of the Daily Caller was banned for telling the Daily Show to learn to code. So the propagandists had protection from Twitter. That's the point. And they've lost it. And blogs like The Verge are very upset. The Verge just published a profanity-laced screed that included this amazing line, quote, most people do not want to participate in horrible, unmoderated internet spaces. Also, everyone crying about free speech conveniently ignores that the biggest threat to free speech in America is the effing government. Okay, well, that's true, but it's also a lie by omission, because in fact, Twitter was acting on behalf of the government. That's the point. And we know that thanks to lawsuits filed by Alex Berenson and others. We know for a fact that Twitter censored political views at the behest of the White House and also at the behest of Pfizer. So the biggest company in the world, the biggest government in the world, get together and tell less powerful people they can't talk. And that's what the media are defending right now. So obviously they don't understand the concept of freedom of speech or why it's important or why Elon Musk bought Twitter. Joe Cirincione, a, quote, NatSec expert, member on the thoroughly discredited Council on Foreign Relations, wrote this last night, for example, quote, I now approach every tweet as if it could be my last. Ooh, the self-dramatization of these people. They're such drama queens. Democratic Party lawyer Mark Elias was hysterical as well. Quote, I am here until he kicks me off. The thing is, Mark Elias isn't going to be kicked off Twitter now. We don't want him to be, by the way. We think everyone should be able to speak, period, because that's the basis of a free country. When you don't have that, you have totalitarianism, and only people who are benefiting from it support it. The whole point of the transaction is to make certain that everyone can talk. That's why Elon Musk did this. The point is to stop censoring all people, period. As the popular account Comfortably Smug put it, quote, we're celebrating because we're free to say what we want. That's what they took from us, and that's why they're terrified now. Exactly. So the people who've always been able to say whatever they want are upset, not because their right to speech is under threat, because you now have the right to speech. And they hate that, because now it's more of a fair fight. Restoring free speech is the main reason that Elon Musk fired Parag Agrawal. That would be the head of Twitter, the loathsome head of Twitter, who went on the record in 2020 saying his goal was to block people from saying what they believe to be true. Watch.
Our role is not to be bound by the First Amendment, but our role is to serve a healthy public conversation. And our moves are reflective of things that we believe lead to a healthier public conversation. The kinds of things that we do to worry about this is to focus less on thinking about free speech, but thinking about how the times have changed. One of the changes today that we see is speech is easy on the internet. Most people can speak. where our role is particularly emphasized is who can be heard.
So free speech isn't just a prerequisite for freedom, of course. It's not simply the first right guaranteed in the Bill of Rights. It's our civic religion. It's what America is. Without free speech, it's not America, period. So here you have a guy who comes to America, clearly a smart guy, does very well here, good for him, made like $42 million last year, great. And within a few years of getting here, decides to overturn our civic religion, and nobody says anything about it. Be gone. No. Elon Musk, also an immigrant to this country, by the way, comes here because he understands that freedom of speech is the whole reason you would want to live here in the first place. So the thing about Twitter before yesterday was that it was censoring people before you even knew you were censored. This is called shadow banning, using algorithms to suppress information, like the New York Post accurate reporting on Hunter Biden's laptop. They did a lot of that, remember?
One of the things I'm most excited about in our efforts is to switch to proactive enforcement. I think that for too long we relied on people reporting things to us, and I'm sorry about your experience and the reports that you get. I can't address those specific ones, but I do think enabling Twitter to be more proactive and actually identify this content to the extent that we can is going to make a big difference for people so that we can take action on this content before it even gets seen.
So we can censor you before you even know you've been censored, and we're so confident in our total power over you that we can brag about it on TV. Now, that woman and her boss and a lot of other people at Twitter, the enemies of free expression, the enemies of freedom itself, they're all gone, walking down the road talking their lunchboxes. This is a huge deal. It's hard to overstate how transformative this could be. The activist left believed it owned Twitter and the public conversation in this country more broadly. Why do they think that? Because for many years they have owned it. They had a monopoly, and that monopoly has been broken. Once everyone can talk, rich or powerful, poor or powerless, doesn't matter. When everyone can talk, nothing will ever be the same. And the Democratic Party will be forced to defend its positions on their merits. Democrats pulled a sitting president off Twitter. Now apparently he's running again. So how could you possibly defend censoring that candidate, Donald Trump? If you support democracy, are you really going to argue that a presidential candidate can't talk? They're going to have to argue that. They're going to have to say that in public. What's that conversation going to look like? The Biden administration is in trouble because of this. Everything depends for them on censorship. Everything. They're going to do everything they can to shut Twitter down again. And they're going to do their best to destroy its new owner. And Elon Musk must know that. He's doing it anyway. And that's the definition of bravery. People assume always that billionaires can afford to be bold. You can do whatever you want. You're rich. But the opposite is true, actually. Look around. How many brave billionaires are there? Not many. Why? Because the more you have, the more you have to lose. There's no such thing as FU money. There's only FU poverty. And yet the richest man in the world is risking it all to save free speech. Whatever you think of Elon Musk, and however this ends, that's a remarkable thing to watch. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. I'm Tucker Carlson tonight. Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson.
Look, okay, there we go. Yeah, and so and I would just like to say before I open it up to comments that I'm not supporting Elon Musk. I think that it's like the most nefarious thing that could come out of this is a Neuralink, you know, a connection, right? So that's, I'm not saying that he might, you know, he's not a, you know, a World Economic Forum puppet. I'm not saying that he's a hero, but I am saying that he made this purchase, I believe, somewhat for free speech, you know, and so no matter my opinions, my, you know, feelings, opinions about him personally, I do think that that was at the core of this decision. So, Elizabeth, you want to go first?
Oh, I love when he speaks the truth. I'm trying to find this live feed that I watched yesterday of Carrie Lake just lambasted the press and for being propagandists and not calling out the Jesse Smollett-like news story that her opponent put out against her. And it spoke everything to what is wrong with our news journalists right now in the
onslaught. Are we talking about the break-in?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm actually more talking about how she just went on about shame on you and you and called every single one of the reporters out and then took their questions. She just handled it so, so very well. And there is no PC blood in this woman at all. And it is the emperor has no clothes. And shame on you for not doing the job that you're intended to do. We cannot really take anything you say to heart because you're bought and sold and you're in the Democrats' back pocket, basically. And it was done so well that it would be wonderful to play some of this, but of course it's not on YouTube at all. But I really think that, you know, for everything that, you know, logically there's been so many people that have come out against Elon Musk and, you know, that he's the wolf in sheep's, or the sheep in wolf's clothing to do this. But that's the throw the baby out with the bathwater type of it's not pessimism. Is it pessimism? Pessimist, where it's kind of like it doesn't matter what you do, everyone's so cynical that we're all doomed to be enslaved by tyranny that there is no good to be found anywhere in the land. I think, you know, hats off and kudos to Elon Musk for wanting to step in, even if he is a military contractor, and that's where he got all his money, and you know, is running the Starlink. He stepped in after this entire debacle of the Senate hearings where you had to painfully watch, what's-his-face that owns, I guess it was the guy that owned Twitter, that looked like he was MK Ultra with a beard and he couldn't answer a question as to why. Dorsey, yes. And then, you know, the same thing with Zuckerberg. They were called on account to how they're running their companies and nothing was done. And it's kind of like, you know, when only the party line message can be out there, which is exactly so evident what was going on when they deplatformed the president of the United States because his speech was dangerous. And today they're calling for, where is President Trump in deplorable, not in, they wanted him to speak out to the country and defend Paul Pelosi and what a horrible act that was. It's kind of like, really? After everything you've done to this man, you're still expecting him to be, you know, on the side of good and step it up for the democracy that you, whatever democracy it is that you envision. You don't go to the aid of someone that you don't know the full story of, you know. We don't really know if this man is, you know, fighting for his life because he's been pummeled to death with a hammer and he's in surgery. We can't even believe anything we see on the news because you just run with a story to get a reaction. So, you know, hats off to Elon for doing this. And they seem to forget that when he went out to buy this thing, he didn't want to. He tried to get out of this because he saw this platform pulled half the people on there. It was just a propagandized soapbox app. That it really wasn't free speech. It was, you know, the few people out there, they were fighting bots, which is, you know, company paid trolls. And he's like, wait a minute, no, he tried to get out of this. He couldn't, and legally had to. And they seem to forget all this stuff. And, you know, even he tweeted today, and again, this is a news story. This is not news. It shouldn't be news. There's a lot of things going on in the world. There was an earthquake in Iran We don't know anything about it. A huge bridge collapsed in China with people clinging to their lives. It looked like the Golden Gate Bridge just collapsed, and people are clinging to their lives. We didn't see this. I saw this on a little thing that came through my feed from an independent journalist, a citizen. We don't see this on the news. The news is not the news. The news is that Elon Musk tweeted the terrible, well, there might be more to the story than meets the eye in response to something that Hillary Clinton tweeted. And then he removed his tweet. And now this is a big news story. So, I think whoever is able to come in and clean up this dystopian nightmare of there is no free speech, if you dare to have any kind of opinion, you're labeled with words that will send you into the gulag of you're not a good citizen. We need to send you to a re-education camp. We need to save ourselves from this. And just one more little thought on when we were talking about all of these labels they want to, you know, slander us or stop our thoughts and our actions by, you know, giving us the label of a homophobe or a racist. We didn't use that word in the 70s. You know what we used? It was called, we're fighting for civil rights. In the connotation of, we didn't want to divide people. To use the term racist was not used until well into the 2000s. We didn't use that in the 80s or the 90s either. It was all about civil rights and human rights. But now it's been weaponized into a, you're just a mean, horrible person. And yes, they can take your bank account, your Twitter account, your children, everything, your job, because you're racist. This thing that has been the tsunami of irrational behavior and thoughts needs to stop. We need to be able to actually have free speech and be adult enough to be able to have debate again. It's okay to have a different opinion. You know?
And especially, I got, you know, a human Ken doll yesterday because we've been friends for years and I've never seen his face because of the filters are so wild that it's just, he looks like a human Ken doll. But he was so pissed off about me thinking that free speech was okay that, of course, now I'm a Kanye supporter and an anti-Semitic. Like, I don't really understand where the logic failure comes from with these people, but it's like, you're gonna block me because I want free speech? Like, I don't even know how these people justify it in their own head. But Lily, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, on that clip I just played.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, we can hear you.
Sorry, I wanted to make sure it was working because it was like cutting out a little bit and I couldn't tell. So I don't know what my feelings are, you know, like I agree with what was being said, like everybody does deserve and want to have a voice regardless of their socioeconomic status or, you know, anything else. And they should, you know, and it really would be a game changer if everybody had a voice that was heard in equal measure, right? Like we could take this thing back, you know, in moments if everybody was able to speak in a way that they're not stupid. I love them, but they're just loud when they play because they're like giant puppies. Anyway, so you know, I deal with all of that. I have a Twitter that I don't ever really use, and weary of, you know, like getting too involved in posting things on Twitter because I don't mean to be pessimist, and I try not to be, but I feel like it's could potentially be a Trojan horse, right? I have mixed feelings about Elon Musk. Like, I agree with a lot of the things that he says, but then I don't know if he actually believes them or not, you know? And so I guess for me,
yeah,
that's like my skepticism because of, you know, you brought up Neuralink and also Starlink, you know, and he has said that he would like to use this Twitter purchase as like a gateway to his Everything app. And the Everything app is where Starlink and Neuralink come in. And I've been doing like extensive research on Starlink recently, actually, because like living in an RV, that's basically, Starlink is basically your only option for internet service. And so it's very interesting, you know, so I've been doing a lot of research on that. And, you know, of course, like the Everything app is tied in social content scoring system. But one thing about Elon Musk that I really respect, and like, regardless of whether I agree with him or not, is that with even with his Neuralink, he wants it to be available to everybody, but he does not want it to be forced on everyone. And he has said that, you know, like that he would like it to be a choice. And, you know, that he recognizes that there would be two classes of people, like, very distant from each other, right? You'd have one class connected with AI, basically a cyborg, and they would, like, know much more fucking Google apps. Let's say you'd be able to, like, give you information very quickly about things and stuff like that, right? Whereas the rest of us would need to, like, read books and, you know, be regular humans. And so, like, I'm okay with it if it's not forced, right? Like, I mean, if I believe in sovereignty, then I have to believe that everybody should choose whatever they want, right? Whether I agree with it or like it or not. And so I can't tell other people that they may. Right?
Careful,
Chris. You know? So I just don't know how I feel about it. But then the thing with Paul Pelosi, that's very interesting, and I'll just say very shortly, I was doing some research on it because I don't get, like, I try not to get too invested or involved in these kinds of things, but the, I can't remember her first name. It was a weird name, like, Innit, Taub. Her last name is Taub, though, T-A-U-B, and she has children with this guy that supposedly was, like, beat Paul Pelosi with a hammer. And they are friends, right? And so, and then they have a daughter. He has a daughter with this woman and two sons. And when you start, like, digging into these people, they have been accused of satanic ritual abuse in court cases, in document and law. One of, like, the top one is a registered child molester on the sex offender registry. And they're all very connected. And the mom of this girl has that, you know, like has a, she has a daughter with that guy. I can't think of his name. I'm so sorry. But anyway, she has openly accused him in court of being in these child trafficking circles that use satanic ritual abuse and various things. And so some of that coming to light might be very interesting and very helpful for the truth. And so I just wanted to mention it. There's a YouTube video, and I posted it on my page on Facebook, and I saved it to that Nightmare Realm album because it got taken down, but then I put it back, and I just kind of, like, disguised it there. They're like those little albums you can save stuff to are kind of a loophole. So anyway, it's there if you ever want to check it out. It was pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, that's probably the most interesting thing about all of this. I didn't even know about this, the SRA stuff.
Yeah, I didn't either, and this video got sent to me, you know, because I don't, like, pay too much attention to some of it. Like, I know what's going on, but then I, like, leave it and focus on something else. And so, you know, when I saw that video, it was extremely interesting to me. I mean, I wasn't surprised, you know, but it's cool that people are connecting all of these dots. And I feel like the more things like this happen, the more, you know, like these dots connect for people that maybe aren't very aware sometimes. Because, I mean, that's kind of like they've made it into this really big deal, right? And so it's almost like they shoot themselves in the foot with this stuff, you know, they make it a big deal. They want to worry everybody like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. those right wing white supremacists are at it again. What will they do next? And then you find out that they're all connected with the Democratic Party and some of the Republicans as well. So anyway, I just think it's interesting to make a note of that kind of stuff sometimes.
Totally. Totally. Mom, you have any thoughts?
Oh.
So I'm going to preface it by, which again, you guys have heard me say this before, but if we have any other new listeners, literally millions of us were kicked off of Twitter in January of 2021, early January, because we disagreed with the way that the election happened. My account was taken down the same day as Donald Trump and General Flynn, and it was followed by General Flynn on Twitter. Of course, they were sacking accounts daily, shadow banning them. Well, first, sacking them, suspending them, permanently suspending them for arguing about the COVID narrative. They were censoring medical professionals. As a matter of fact, one of the stories I was going to do today is Dr. Peter McCullough lost his – they sued him during all of this that was going on. When anytime anybody said anything that was not part of the official narrative, they were silenced, they were censored, they were kicked off of social media. People went to their professional environments and wrote to their bosses and so on and so forth. Anyone who spoke outside of what the people in power said we were allowed to say was banned, shadow banned, censored, suspended. The example that Tucker gave about the learn to code business, I'm not sure if you guys remember how all that got started, but the climate activists were trying to shut down the coal mines in Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, all the places where there are coal mines. And people said, what are they going to do? They've been working in these coal mines, their families have been for generations. And journalists said they should learn to code. They should go and learn how to operate some computer gizmo wizmo, and that everything would be just fine if they would learn to code. Too long after that people started fighting back against the media narratives, and a bunch of journalists were starting to lose their jobs. And people on Twitter said, we don't feel sorry for you. You should just learn to code. So I can't pronounce her name, whatever her name is. She was the chief security officer at Twitter. And you notice she was the first one to go. Because as Tucker said, these people went on television. They felt they were so powerful and that they could do whatever they wanted to do to whoever they wanted to do it to, that they decided what was correct speech. So here's the problem. Dangerous for us to have the right to speak because words are violence. And you heard the example she gave about people dogpiling. So someone would make an idiotic statement, a journalist, and they've been doing this for years with Trump, with, you know, every little thing, and then they would get what they call dogpiled. They'd get 5,000 tweets saying, you're an idiot, and you won't silence us, and then their account would get taken down.
You know, you could call it dogpiling, or you could call it ratioed, which is what it is.
Yes.
But, of course, they have to make it sound as bad as possible. Sorry to interrupt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they would get ratioed into oblivion. On Twitter, there's a gentleman named Comfortably Smug, and Comfortably Smug had what he called a legion of minions, M-I-N-I-O-N-S, and I was a minion. And he would say, minions, swarm. And the next thing you know, that person was ratioed into oblivion, and they would be crying by the end of it, literally, some of them in tears. You guys are so mean. And we didn't say anything mean. We just said, you suck. You're stupid. Your opinion sucks, and you're wrong, and here's why, and so on and so forth. So even though they will tell you that the speech was violence, it wasn't true. They mainly just pointed out what a fool the person was. So then came the day where that woman and the man that got fired immediately took down the account of the sitting president of the United States of America. At that time, he was the sitting president still. And I think, yes, it happened before January 6th. And that, for me, was the line that they cannot do that. This is the United States of America. The First Amendment is the first one for a reason. Our ability to say what we want, when we want, to whom we want to, should be unlimited. There's absolutely no limit to that. And it doesn't matter if you don't like what I say, right? Okay, so all of that to say, they took down the Babylon Bee, right? I don't know if you guys have ever read their website. It is funny as heck, because there's a lot of truth to the stuff, and they tease, and it's satire, and it's funny, okay? You can't mock a liberal. Them crazy makes them cry. And they took down the Babylon Bee. And that's when Elon Musk decided in that moment to buy Twitter. And he did. They're having a meltdown. They've been melting down since he took it over on Friday. I wish you could see some of this stuff on Twitter. I went back in. I created a new account. So did all. Okay, so next we're going to go to QAnon. Okay? First thing that I want to say is there is no such thing as QAnon. It doesn't exist. There is Q, who was a poster on some message boards. On a message board. What, Danielle, what's the name of that board that he was on? Is this thing on? Hello? What happened?
Was that 4chan that you're talking about?
4chan, that a girl, Lily. Okay. So Danielle probably is taking a break because I guess I'm on a soapbox. But okay, so Q started posting on something called 4chan, and he gained a lot of followers, and a lot of people were interested in the things that he said. And from the people that became interested in that's an assumption, right? I have no idea if it's a man or a woman or a trans person. I have no idea. Okay, the person would post things, and then a bunch of people would go and find out what he was talking about and start digging in and finding out about the stories. You are and they're called Anons. Okay. Anons go and dig up quote unquote conspiracy theories and find out if they're true or debunk them or whatever they do. And they go digging and digging and digging until they find the answers. And then they would put it on Twitter. Drove the liberals crazy. Drove them nuts. Okay, so then all of a sudden, the enemy of the people, who most people call the mainstream media, decided that QAnon, quote unquote QAnon, was dangerous, and that it had to be silenced. All the way back to the idea of Q and Anons. So what they did was they kicked off literally hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions, of Anons off of Twitter. Okay. And then Elon Musk came back on Friday, and since then, the engagement is through the roof. People are getting thousands and thousands of followers within, a 24-hour period. They've been shadow banning everybody on this site that doesn't agree with the official narrative. all of the Anons, quote unquote, that I used to follow and that used to follow me are coming back to Twitter, and they keep posting things like, wait for it, Pizzagate is real. Twitter suppressed medical information that could have saved millions of lives. Those kind of, men can't get pregnant. Those kind of blasphemies that would get you banned for life from Twitter. I'm watching it happen in real time. So while I agree with both of you, I'm not sure what about Elon Musk, what his motives are. At this point, I don't care because I'm having a blast on Twitter again. And I get to see all the people that I, you know, that, well, I found them all on Truth Social. And I was having fun just, you know, going back. But that this is the battlefield. Twitter's the battlefield. Truth Social is an echo chamber, and it's fun to see all the people that got banned and then banned and then banned again, create a new account, get kicked off, right? But Twitter is where you actually get to engage with, quote, unquote, the other side. So while, again, I don't know. So today, Hillary Clinton, back to the Paul Pelosi story, came on and started mouthing the narrative, which that it is QAnon, a QAnon radical that broke into the Pelosi home and was saying, where's Nancy? So the left has the narrative has become that this person was there, a crazed individual led on by QAnon, there to assassinate Nancy Pelosi. And they're so Elon Musk, so Hillary Clinton posts that narrative, that bullshit narrative on there. And, of course, she's still got millions of followers on Twitter. She never got any of her followers taken down. And Elon Musk came in under her tweet and said, there may be more to this story. And he posted an article written by some Santa Monica newspaper. The guy did some actual shoe leather reporting or investigation that says that Paul Pelosi is a gay man who regularly engages gay sex with random strangers. He purchases gay sex, and Twitter melted down. So Elon Musk was fact-checking Hillary Rodham Clinton in real time. First time that's happened in 5 years that I've been on this site.
That
turns out, yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it because there are questions about the Pelosi story. They have Secret Service protection. They live in a gated community with paid security. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and when the cops got there, a person opened the door after they. It was a welfare check. Paul Pelosi called himself. He went to the bathroom and said his friend David was there, and please come. The cops bust in themselves. Okay, so they showed where the window had been busted. It was the cops that busted it in. They walk in. They're both in their underwear, and they begin to fight over a hammer. And this is when David DePape struck Paul Pelosi right in front of the cop. So that's the story. But they're doing everything they can to cover it up and make it about something else.
There. Yeah, this is wild. Right. This is a story that, you know, like I often follow these kinds of stories, but this one is unfolding with twists and turns that I never saw coming, like this, you know, satanic ritual abuse thing, the gay sex thing. You know, I'm not saying that gay sex is even bad, like you do you, Paul, but this is much deeper, and the twists and turns just keep coming.
They do. The guy is a homeless, drug-addled, drug-addicted, got gay pride flags in his front yard, BLM flags in his front yard, lives in a bus, his children live in an apartment. He's been on the streets for years. But okay, so here we go. It's after four anyway, so I'm just going to finish up with my good news report. There is, from Chuck Colesto, there was a story whereby that the supposed stuff that this guy was posting about, quote-unquote, QAnon, only happened in the last 2 weeks. They put up some websites, and they took them right down. So it even looks even creepier and more suspicious that they set this guy up to go in and do this to get the political, the October surprise business. Crazy. So do you guys mind if I just go ahead and do my good news report? And then, but do you have any questions about any of the stuff that my rant? I'm sorry if I went on a rant.
Well, my call dropped for about, you know, half of it because my child that I love very much would not get off the internet, even though I give him a 30-minute warning before the show. And so my call dropped. So I missed the first part of it. But yeah, like I've already given my piece about this.
Okay. Well, sweetheart, Danielle, the first part of it was me talking about them censoring us and kicking us all off of Twitter at the same time. You know, and I know you heard the part about Dr. McCullough, and why they do the things that they do when they do it. Okay. They cannot stand free speech was the upshot. I talked a little bit about Q and Anons, that there is no such thing as QAnon. And it all kind of ties together because they're trying to make this out to be some sort of QAnon, quote unquote, QAnon conspiracy. First of all, QAnon doesn't exist. There is no such thing. Anyway, but so you didn't
miss
much.
I had a question.
Go ahead, Lily.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, and I was terrible because it's like hard to segue sometimes to like know when it's.
It's okay, please.
But my pretty.
And I wish you weren't cutting out. You're in a really bad spot there, Miss Lily.
Is it better now?
Now it is. Yeah.
Okay. My question or comment that I'm wondering, and I kind of wonder what you guys think, and, you know, some of it we'll just have to watch it unfold, I suppose, but I am excited with what he was going to do about the private messaging because, you know, Elon has access to all of that now. And if he truly is on our side, because I get confused, you know, like I can't really tell if he is. He's kind of a wild card in my opinion. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to see. And I wonder what you guys will come up some of that, right? Like now that he has all of the posts that they've ever deleted, you know, referencing Pizzagate and all kinds of different awful things that they've talked about, and their private messages back and forth between each other, you know, that he is able to access all of now. And I kind of wonder if they're actually freaking out about that, but they can't say it out loud. And so instead they're, you know, talking about the dangers of free speech.
I have a story about that. So do you remember last week we were talking about the state of Missouri suing the federal government because they were in collusion with the social media bigwigs? Well, another state sued them as well. The state of Louisiana said that Americans are subjects, not citizens, when their speech is suppressed by government. And so they're going after the government. And yes, to your point, Lily, now that he has the keys to the kingdom, and he has said that when he gets his hands on the codes and the emails and all the communications going in and out of Twitter, that he's going to be transparent. Now, again, it remains to be seen. We don't know if he's actually going to do it. At this point, we trust no one, right? But he
Good
has
girl.
Said that if there is, you know, that when he finds this stuff out, he's going to share it with the American people.
I'm so excited. This could be like the biggest, you know, like gift ever. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Love you guys. I'll shut up now and let you finish.
No worries. So the AG lawsuit from Louisiana says our government was engaged in telling social media companies what they could say and could not say on their platforms, Landry said. We started this case back in June. People laughed at us. Then all of a sudden, we got past the deposition phase and the subpoena phase. We were able to subpoena records in emails, and we started uncovering the communication between the federal officials and big tech. These folks believe that they know better than anyone else, Landry stated. These are not people that believe in liberty. They are not people that have respect for the Constitution. They believe that basically Americans are really not citizens. They are really subjects to do the government's bidding, and the Americans don't have enough responsibility. They don't have enough clear thinking to be able to make decisions on their own. So this is the second state that has sued the federal government for just this kind of stuff. Once Elon gets his hands on the internal communications coming out of Twitter, I believe it's going to explode. It's very likely that that, remember last week when we were talking about the Missouri lawsuit, the judge was saying they've already proved their case that the government was colluding with these big tech agencies. So more to come. It could very well be that Elon Musk had his hands on that stuff long before he actually, quote unquote, took over the company. So, and that he's been releasing it.
And they admit it, right? Sorry to interrupt, but if you watch a press conference, you know what I mean? If you watch the White House press conferences, they told us that they went in and were just going to help
and
Twitter and Facebook out.
They Jen Psaki stood up at the podium and talked about the conversation she had with the people at Facebook and Twitter. So they admitted it. So that was why when Tracy Beans was so excited last week, she's saying, this judge isn't saying allegedly, he's saying it already happened. Now we're just going to figure out what we're going to do about it. So it's coming. Okay. So I got just a little bit of election news, and then I'm not going to stay on too long. Apparently they're already pulling election shenanigans. In three states, we've discovered some ballots that were preloaded inside a Dropbox in Pennsylvania. Here we go again. Two others reportedly also had preloaded ballots inside the boxes. So there's been a big concern about Dropboxes, obviously, after the movie 2000 Mules. No. Sorry, guys. In addition to True the Vote cell phone data discovery, the Gateway Pundit has also documented Dropbox abuse. Dropbox abuse over and over and over. Now, in footage obtained by the Gateway Pundit, it appears to show a Dropbox in Center County, Pennsylvania, being opened, official bag being placed in the box for Election Day. Much to the surprise of the officials opening the Dropbox, however, was the discovery of 10 ballots already inserted into the Dropbox. They opened it up and found 10 ballots in there already, and they were pre-filled out. With how much you want to bet. It says preloaded ballots inside when being officially opened. Our source claims that two other drop boxes were opened last week as well, and 8 ballots were discovered, bringing the total thus far in just one county to 18 ballots. The source also claims that authorities are investigating. The ballots were not open and were placed in a sealed box, but as the man in the video says, they know what to do with them. So they're going to investigate. So that's good news that they caught them. But if they found 18 ballots in the one county, they're doing it elsewhere. I guarantee it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? Continue reading for free. Okay, so here we go with the Epoch Times again. Elizabeth, bless your heart, trying to help me. It says, and this is about a ballot.
Oh, you got
it. No, it was what I found. Now, and it won't let me read it. But it says, Wisconsin judge refuses to allow mail-in ballots with partial addresses to be counted in a win for the GOP. It says a Wisconsin judge has rejected a request from the state's League of Women Voters to allow election officials to count absentee ballots with incomplete witness addresses. So that was another one of the shenanigans they pulled in 2020. This is one of the things that's happened since the 2020 election. Millions of people have gone all over the country and started putting a stop to the shenanigans they pulled. in 2020, which is good. Two election officials who violate the law, so that's good. The Georgia Supreme Court confirmed Tuesday what most informed Georgians have known all along. The court found that Georgia citizens, including voters, have standing to sue the government, sue government officials who violate Georgia law. The court overturned parts of lower court rulings in cases entitled Sons of Confederate Veterans, Henry County Board of Commissioners, and Sons of Confederate Veterans versus the Newton County Board of Commissioners. In those cases, organizations were joined by individuals who sued the county boards for voting to remove statues that are legally protected. So it's, you know, maybe the statues isn't a big deal to you, but the government people were saying, you are not allowed to sue us, you peasants. And the peasants said, oh, yes, we are. And the judge agreed with them. Let's see. I want to get to the COVID stuff in a second, but I want to make sure. Oh. More voting stuff. They're standing out by a drop box in Arizona. They had camo and they were armed and they were watching, they were monitoring the drop box. That's also happening all over the United States, especially in states where we believe that there was fraud in the 2020 election. And Mark Elias, wait, pop quiz. Somebody come up with it real fast. Who's Mark Elias?
DNC lawyer.
Yes. No, you're supposed to say demon. God.
Oh, I'm sorry. That too. He can wear more than one hat.
Guy's a freaking demon. Anyway, so Mark Elias, DNC lawyer, sued and said that it wanted the judge to say that these people were not allowed to monitor the quote-unquote intimidate voters. And the judge said, no, they're allowed. That's their constitutional right. They can stand there and monitor that ballot box if they want to. It says, Judge, U.S. District Court Judge Michael Liberti said it was unconstitutional to prevent monitors from overseeing the delivery of ballots via drop boxes in Arizona. It says, in Arizona, U.S. District Court Judge Michael Liberti declined an emergency injunction request from two progressive groups that sought to prevent ballot drop box monitoring. What are they hiding, you guys? It's so freaking transparent. Judge Liberti said it was unconstitutional to prevent monitors from overseeing the delivery of ballots via drop box. The injunction request was filed jointly by the progressive groups Arizona Alliance for Retired Americans and Vote Latino Against Clean Elections. Vote Latino Against Clean Elections? What a great name. A conservative group that organized to observe ballot drop boxes in Phoenix. The progressive groups claimed that the founder of Clean Elections USA, Melody Jennings, was responsible for a campaign of vigilante voter intimidation, which is bullshit. Judge Liberti said he could not craft a meaningful form of injunctive relief that does not violate defendants' First Amendment rights and those of the Dropbox observers. So they tried to get it to where people were not allowed to watch and prevent what happened in 2020 with them stuffing the ballot boxes with thousands of ballots. And so that's great news. Okay, Biden administration was sued for hiding documents on baby formula investigation. So remember when we had the baby formula shortage? Apparently, yes. The White House was in communication with somebody, and they wanted the records, and they of course stonewalled. The FTC investigation into the causes of the infant formula crisis is especially significant, given that the nation continues to confront shortages in the supply of infant formula that threatens the well-being of some of the country's most vulnerable individuals. On September 7th, the FTC told the watchdog in a letter it would be unable to comply with its FOIA request within the 20-day period. The agency granted itself an extension, of course, due to the unusual circumstances that arose from the need to search for and collect the requested records. Okay, so the Biden administration is being sued. There was some kind of a shenanigan. Speaking of FOIA requests, before I go on to my COVID stuff, and I'm going to because there's some really cool COVID stuff, this week, the FBI answered or finally filed their motion. Remember a few weeks ago I told you that the FBI was stonewalling and had been stonewalling for 6 years. Chuck Colesto, a journalist, filed a FOIA request for the Seth Rich laptop that the FBI has in its possession. And remember, we had a good chuckle about why the FBI would have the laptop of some kid that worked for the DNC that supposedly was murdered during a robbery, why they had it, and why they were trying to keep it. Yeah, a botched robbery, correct, where he left his watch and his wallet on his person as he died. So they've been, first of all, they found out that the FBI has it, which we don't understand why, and they said, you know, the investigation, quote-unquote, is over. Give us the laptop. We want the information that's on it. The FBI said no, and the judge said give it to them. Finally ruled a couple of weeks ago, yes, you must give the comply with this FOIA request. The FBI said we need a little more We need a little more time, Judge, because we want to come back at this because, you know, for whatever crazy reasons. Well, it turns out they did file a motion to suppress the information to prevent the FOIA request from going through, and they want to hold on to the laptop for 66 years.
Yeah. Very Kennedy-esque. Very
Kennedy-esque. So we don't know what the judge is going to do.
Who knew?
Whoopsie. We don't know what the judge is going to do.
National security. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please.
Let me just talk about Seth Rich for 1 second, because
Go ahead.
I've been following this since the day it was done, right? Since the day it happened. And before that, you know, there was plenty of stuff going on in the background about Seth Rich. I believe he was actually, he might have been one of Jared Beck's subpoena, right? Like hand over to the DNC, you're being served.
Right.
I don't know the name for it. But anyway, this has been fishy since the very beginning. We knew it wasn't a botched robbery. And actually, he did not die in the street. He died at the hospital. He was awake. He was talking. And then they went to the hospital. And then look into the hospital. That's another little rabbit hole. So,
right.
You know, the Anons out there think that he died in the hospital by the hands of a doctor and on purpose.
And
him. Right? Yep. And so now, and then we've got the Julian Assange thing, where Julian Assange was like, yeah, we don't reveal our sources. Yeah, just last week in D.C., a boy
was... One of our sources was murdered. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah, exactly. So all of this stuff. And then Donna Brazile, you know Donna Brazile dedicated her a book to him that she wrote?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like all of this stuff, it's like, oh, and then the fact, you know what the DNC did to remember this young man's life? Do you know what kind of a memorial they did for him?
No, I have no idea what they do.
They put up a bike rack in front of the DNC headquarters. Seth Rich, like, dedicated to the memory of. You know what he
Very
mean? Like,
kind of
like, like the Anons have been screaming about this forever. And people have just been saying that we're crazy. It was just a botched robbery. Let it go. Why in the F would they want to keep this secret for 66 years if it was just a botched robbery?
There's way more
national security.
Absolutely right. Yes. Laura back front and center is the voice of exposure on child trafficking for Satanist human sacrifice. Notably, she mentions debriefing special operations troops who have been rescuing kidnapped children from the, okay, you guys need to help me with this, DUMB-S. What is that? And Hillary's container ships. She hasn't named names yet, but review the number of Hollywood screen actors, politicians, government execs, judges, and news luminaries who have dropped out of view who are vacationing in the Cuban spa awaiting sentencing. What is the DUMBS, D-U-M-B-S? Do we know?
I don't.
Okay. The final thing that I want to cover, which is, I mean, certainly not going to be a surprise to anyone in this on this call, China no longer deserves the benefit of the doubt. Bombshell Senate report concludes that COVID most likely leaked from lab. As lawmakers point, damn it, get the freaking advertisement. Lawmakers point the finger at Beijing. Policymakers said substantial evidence pointing to lab accident. Now, they use accident and leak interchangeably in this article. I think eventually we'll get to the point where they have to admit that it wasn't. For right now, that's the story they're going with. We'll see. Lab accident has emerged, but evidence for a natural spillover is missing even after 3 years of probes. Unwillingness to cooperate means China can no longer get benefit of the doubt. Findings come in an interim report published by the Senate Committee on Health. Origins of COVID still shrouded in mystery with no concrete evidence either way, but China has shut down independent probes into the lab and silenced scientists. The COVID pandemic was most likely the result of a lab leak, according to a bombshell Senate report. Policymakers said there was substantial evidence of an accident at a research facility, while evidence for a natural spillover is still missing. The interim report concluded that China's unwillingness to cooperate or open up the lab in question meant it no longer deserves the benefit of the doubt. GOP members of the Senate committee, Ron Johnson? Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, is leading the charge. On the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions reviewed hundreds of studies into the origins of COVID and interviewed several dozen experts over the past 15 months. Writing in the report, they conclude, based on the analysis of the publicly available information, it appears reasonable to conclude that the COVID-19 pandemic was more likely than not the result of a research-related incident. They add, nearly 3 years after the COVID-19 pandemic began, critical evidence that would prove that the emergence of SARS-CoV-2 and resulting COVID-19 pandemic was caused by a natural zoonotic spillover is missing. The report accepts there is still crucial missing information about how the pandemic truly came to be, with no direct evidence for either natural or synthetic origin. But the lack of transparency and collaboration from China prevents reaching a more definitive conclusion, the Senate committee adds. The hypotheses of a natural zoonotic origin no longer deserves the benefit of the doubt or the presumption of accuracy. Proponents of the lab leak theory, including former President Donald Trump, were initially dismissed as conspiracy theorists or denounced as xenophobes. Of course we were. So, earlier this year, appeared to trace the first cluster of cases back to one specific corner of the wet market where animals known to harbor COVID, including raccoons, dogs, hedgehogs, rats, and squirrels, were kept. But they won't cooperate with us. And we know where it came from. But the part that bothers me about the article is this issue that it was an accident, because I don't believe it was. That was a lot of stuff. Good news about Italy. They're going to end the ban on healthcare workers not vaccinated against COVID, which we've already done that here in the United States, at least I got to stop testing weekly. And that's all I got today. What do you – questions, concerns, comments about the information that I shared? It was a lot.
Concern, you didn't cover the New York City having to not only hire back city workers, healthcare workers, but give them back pay. That was a pretty good news story this week.
It was, but actually that was a news story last week and I did cover it. But yes.
I'm getting my weeks confused.
It's okay. They fought them, they sued them, and they won. The tide is turning. The very fact that Lee Zeldin, a Republican, is looking to beat Kathy Hochul in New York as to be the governor of New York State should tell you everything you need to know. Everything is breaking. Remember, they kept talking about a red wave. Well, actually, they were talking about a blue wave, Rovember, right? They put all their cards in.
That's
in
so cringe.
Yeah, so freaking cringe. It looks like for sure we're going to take the Republicans are going to take the House, It's very likely now that we're going to take the Senate with a decent majority, going to take a whole bunch of governors' races across country. And so they get to get their fingers into the pies of those states, in particular Pennsylvania and Arizona, get our fingers in the pies of those election fraud states, and find out what really happened. So going forward, we can, you know, prevent it from happening again. I'm suggesting that everybody go out and vote. Go out and vote, even if you're upset about the way our country and elections are corrupt. We can flood the polls. We can overtake this. That's my advice. Go out and vote. I'm going to.
And CNN is very upset about that. They are really worried. They're worried that the election deniers are going to flood the voting booths.
Yes.
And that it's going to ruin democracy.
Yes.
You know, getting Twitter out of the hands of the government trolls is one thing.
The CIA, you might as well say it.
The state-run media still is fighting reality. They still want us to see that, you know, black is white, and if it's not, you are wrong and you're bad, and you're ruining your children's future.
You won't even entertain
election integrity, because that election was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, and that's just.
But they're already setting it up. They're already setting it up for 2024. Hillary Clinton came out and said that they're going around and taking over state legislatures and making it. They're trying to say that state legislatures could determine the outcome of elections. Well, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. What?
That's how it goes.
Tina Warren,
well, that is in the Constitution.
I know.
Oh.
Yeah. Tina, watch. Look, watch. There it is. There's a hawk flying over the chimney.
Mm.
With a watch.
Mm.
Ah, going to chase the hawk out of the yard. Okay, you guys, I want you to have a peaceful, God-filled, spirit-filled week. Go out and give them heaven. Yeah,
well,
on Halloween.
I'm going to be
on
as
Halloween,
nice as I can.
All right,
be
peace.
Nice
all right, thank you. Love
peace
you. Love you guys.
Take care. Bye-bye. She's so cute.
Yay. It looks like we've got a caller, too. So hello
to
the caller. If you want to be a part of the show, press 1. If not, we're glad you're here.
Oh, please press 1. Oh, I want that – was it Sarah? Sarah, I wanted to talk about the – hello. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hold on. Here we go.
Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to chime in about the Elon Musk Twitter thing. And I'm wondering if you guys think the same about this. I think they're going to attack Elon Musk soon. They'll probably call him a racist in some way, like he's not hiring enough minority employees for his company. Well, they'll probably attack him saying that he's a woman chauvinist or a woman beater
there's
or something.
All of the
but
above.
It's coming.
Oh, yeah,
I think they're going to attack him.
I think you're absolutely right.
Okay, but let me just interject this because I think it's important. He's literally an African American.
Right, he's from Africa.
Elon Musk?
Yes. He's from
he
South Africa.
He's actually a displaced Nazi. They all went to South America in South Africa.
They went to South America. They did not go to South Africa. But his family's got some shady coal mining or diamond mining deals going on. I'm just saying that the reason they can't really attack him as a racist is because he's literally an African American. But I'm done.
you continue on with your thought. I think that's a very real thing that's happening, because you can't take over a company and change the status quo without being, you can't just fire people indiscriminately. There are actual laws. You know, your job performance, yes, but then it's like they can come back with, well, it's because I was a woman, I was an Indian woman, an Asian woman, I was this, I was that. And you have to really kind of, either he has to fire everybody and start fresh, or he's probably going to risk a lot of lawsuits on that. And they're already starting to, you know, throw the daggers at him for being a mean person. But let me ask you, my friend that called in, what do you think about this as being just a huge distraction to keep us focused off the fact that there are other people higher up that are manipulating the money and our food resources and the behind the scenes that we will never focus upon, because we're going to come over here and fight over who bought the Twitter. What do you think about that?
The money issue is an important thing, and maybe it's something you should check into. It's going to be linked to your digital wallet ID, but that's another issue in itself. Elon Musk is an incredible person for what he's doing right now. He's exposing a lot. The thing is, the media is controlled by, I don't know what you want to call this group. We used to call them the Illuminati. Then they were called Bilderberg. I think the term right now is globalist. And these globalists are controlling the narrative. And if those who control the narrative will control the outcome. And now that they got a monkey wrench, their engine was working properly, and Elon Musk being a monkey wrench, they have to try to get rid of him. Therefore, they're going to spin all kinds of narratives against him to get people not to trust in him. The same way they're doing with Kanye West and the exact thing that they did with Alex Jones. They sued the guy for $1 billion. I've never heard anybody get sued for $1 billion before. And this is the first time ever. And they didn't, and it's not because of damages. It's because they needed to make an example of someone speaking out against their regime, their power, someone trying to destroy them. And that's how powerful that they are. So, I mean, I heard you say earlier that, you know, we should go out and vote. I'm going to go out and vote, but at the same time, I don't think my vote matters anymore. After what they did with Trump, what I saw them do with Trump, I don't think our votes even matter. But, I mean, it's agreed. Worth a shot. It's like, you know, there's nothing else we can do. That's all we can do, but I don't think it's going to work. We need to have more people like an Elon Musk, a person that has power to bring it back to us. And I say we praise Elon Musk as much as we can and ignore any narrative that comes out against him, whether they say that he's racist, he's been beating up on women, stuff like that.
Yeah, and of course they're going to try all of that for sure. You know what's funny, though? Like kind of like on your point, to your point that they're going to attack him any way possible, he walked into that building on day one with a sink in his hand. He's
with a what?
Not, yeah. He walked into the on day one of owning Twitter. Elon Musk walked into the building with a bathroom sink in his hands.
A sink.
He, like, with a drink.
Meaning,
I assume.
Meaning, he's clean. I don't know what was the.
Maybe he's draining. Like, that to me is like he's about to start draining.
Draining.
And what did he do?
Swamp?
He fired the executive.
Interesting.
He's draining the swamp, and it's so to speak. So the reason I bring this up is because I think they know, you know, he knows that he's not safe at this moment if he was just going to rely on the goodness of people. But he's the richest man in, you know, in the world, basically, or one of them. And he walks into this company, you know, after the whole, all of the media is, you know, at his throat, right? He's got a Homeland Security, I think, investigation and, a DOJ investigation. Like, you know, I think for, you know, for what it's worth, I think that he's got a backup plan. You know, I don't think that he's just going into this thing blind. I think that he knows he's being targeted, and I think he knows he's pretty squeaky clean. And it's a hell of a show, to be honest. You know, and this is a fight for a resource. It's not just breads and circuses. We can control the narrative if we control these tools. And so, you know, I think he's going to be fine. I don't think he's, you know, going to get arrested or assassinated or anything like that. But, I mean, character assassinations. But you know what? Who cares? Yeah, I mean, when you control the narrative and all he's saying at this point is free speech is good, you know, like this is just, I mean, you know, I guess at the end of the day, at least this is one hell of a show.
The argument that they have about free speech on Twitter, because I have liberal friends, and I think they're all idiots, but they're my friends. We grew up together. Their narrative on this whole Twitter freedom of speech is they're saying that are Nazis allowed to go on there and say racist things? Is it okay to allow Nazis to go on there and say racist things about black minorities? And I argue that. Well, what about blacks and minorities going on there saying racist things about white people? I mean, it's America. We should be allowed to say whatever the hell we want to. And it's your choice to listen to it or not, you know?
Exactly.
But that's precisely the argument. And that's the argument that the liberals have, that we shouldn't be allowed to say dangerous things. That's what they're considering. That's what they're saying. And I don't think any freedom of speech is a dangerous thing altogether. Because of the freedom of speech, we had things like the free black movement. Jim Crow laws were abolished because of that. Slavery was abolished because of that. Women's rights to work and children's rights. I mean, all kinds of rights stemmed from freedom of speech, which is a dangerous thing. And it should be allowed. That's my opinion. You know?
I agree with you.
Exactly.
Now, just to change a little bit before I go, I want to speak about the whole money thing that you were bringing up a little bit. I don't know.
I was going to ask you if you know about Catherine Austin Fitz, because I think you do.
No.
If you know about the globalists. Because I think that's the most important thing to talk about. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I don't know who Catherine is. Can you explain to me? I don't know.
Austin Fitz, she was the former HUD, Secretary of HUD under, I think she was with Bush, she was with Clinton. She found out all there's missing money in the budget. And that was right before it became a congressional hearing with Rumsfeld, and the Pentagon was missing trillions of dollars, and then boom, the towers went down. And everyone forgot about it, but there's always been missing money. They're like, well, where's the money going? And the government wouldn't. After her persecuted her, she still found a way to speak out on this. She has a celebrity report, and she calls the powers that be Mr. Global. Mr. Global is pulling the strings. The money's going. There's no money in America anymore. It's all overseas. The pension funds, the stock market is just an imaginary game to keep you mesmerized. But she's speaking out on the thing we need to really invest in is we need to invest in our own army at this point because they're going after us. And they're going after us with the social credit system. And once cash is gone, they can control you lock, stock, and barrel. And she travels around and does many speeches upon this. So she's somebody, maybe do a little YouTube. She's amazing. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the money because I think that's the most important right now.
Yeah. So the whole cashless thing is an important thing that you had mentioned, that they want this inflation to keep going, and they want this depression, because once everyone is poor, then they could reset the system. And the system has been reset before with Nixon when he took the United States off the gold standard and made money
yeah.
fiat, where the government can mm-hmm. just print whatever they want. Now, the United States is not broke, all right? It's worse than broke. It's in debt. If you have a friend that's broke, you just pay for them. They just hang out with you, you know, and then you pay for their meal or something like that. You just pay their gas. But if your friend is in debt, that's a dangerous person because most likely he'll steal mm-hmm. from you or she will steal from you. And the United States right now right. is in debt. I think the last time I checked, it was like trillions of dollars, 30-some mm-hmm. trillion. That's an incredible amount. But what they're leading to, from what I know, if you ever heard of the WEF, the World Economic Forum, they're talking about
oh, yeah.
resetting the whole currency system. They're issuing these things called CBDCs, which stands for Central Bank Digital Currencies. And so they want to
yeah.
get everyone off the gold standards and the cash, and they want everyone to have a digital ID. Now, your digital ID would have like a driver's license, your passport, your health records, and at the same time, it would have a wallet in there, a digital wallet. So every time someone gives you money, like let's say I give you money to donate for your show right now. That money that I gave to your show has a serial number that can be traced back to who gave me the money so that I could give to you. And the Federal Reserve will be in control of the wallet. They trace all the money from where it goes. So at the end of the year, you don't even have to do your taxes. They can estimate it all in through digital directly through your wallet. And every one of us is going to be issued that. Now, I know it sounds a little bit weird. It sounds crazy, like a conspiracy, but they're already doing that in China. It's being done right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And it won't, that's right, and it won't take much longer till it comes over here. Expect that to come, the digital
yeah.
wallet, pretty soon.
Here's an example with PayPal. PayPal, before they did the $2,500 fine that they're going to fine you if they don't
yeah.
like what you're posting?
Yeah. So
yeah,
if you want to donate to
before
my show, please
that,
don't do it on PayPal because I'll
well,
owe money.
Most of us were using PayPal. And the people that donated to the truckers' cause, they were using PayPal. They took $25 million and said, oh, no, you can't have it. They raised $25 million. PayPal impounded that money because it was going towards a terrorist operation.
Interesting.
And
so it is what's it called? GoFundMe, right?
Yeah. I have a PayPal account. I gave $50 to Father Art, Pastor Art in Canada when he was in prison. And immediately my PayPal account, they wanted $700. There's no more. You get to pay, you know, $39 a month. They wanted $745. My credit was cut off because they didn't like who I gave $50 to. That happened here. And you think if you subscribe to this digital currency, which they're thinking about doing in the UK right now, I think they were trying to do it in Australia. This is a real, this is not conspiracy. This is an actual program that they have
set up.
And it's looming. That's looming. That's real. And they tried to, now in the U.S., if you want, and most people have to have a driver's license. I know there are people who operate without, but you need a driver's license. And in order to get a driver's license, now it's called a, what is it? It's a special license. You have to bring your birth certificate. And it's like an iPass for the whole country. And if you
real ID, real ID.
Yeah, it's a real ID is what it's called. And that's the precursor
to this. No to that. My husband's
well,
why not? You know, because I was getting my license renewed, and my husband's like, well, why not? Why wouldn't you do that? Blah 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 blah. I was like, not doing that.
My job is hitched upon my driver's license, and I have to have driver's license. So I'm going
to
have to.
But to be fair, you're a bus driver, but you can get an ID. You can get a California ID. You don't have this real pass or whatever it's called.
I have to have an Illinois driver's license to have my job, and that is part of their ID system. Is They're using it, doing it through the DMV. And so they pretty much have you by the balls with this. This is, they're implementing. And it's coming in increments. And in the meantime, our eyes are not on this, the gravity of what they're doing. They tried to do it with a vax passport, and we bucked that.
Yes, they did.
They're doing it naturally with it's happening next year. Next year I have to have my birth certificate is an actual crumbling piece of paper that people look at. They're like, what is it? It's a mimeograph copy. And they're like, oh, geez, it's got a whiteout on it. And it has the Secretary of State was working in the office back then. And they held it up to the light, and they're like, oh, geez, look at this. Like, oh, I didn't know if he worked there back then. And they let me have it. But they just said, next year you have to have a real birth certificate. So I have to go to the, you know, and comply, or else the next time they're not going to renew my license. So it is a real thing, but that is your first step to this. And people aren't going to, they're not going to buck that. It's just going to happen. But then the next step is all of a sudden the economy crashes, like he was saying. And everybody who's into the cryptocurrency, it's going to go digital. And it's going to be easily manipulated. It is not going to have any basis on a gold standard. And that's going to be great for our country because we're more than broke, we're in debt, as is all of the UK. And it's just going to happen. And then you are a good citizen and you have money, or they punish you. And this is the social credit system is a real thing looming. And in the meantime, we're fighting about Trump and Twitter and all this crazy stuff. And in the background, we're going to be monetarily enslaved. So you're right on the button that this is, it sounds weird, and it's very scary, but it's very real because you've got the Davos crowd. You have what's his face that looks like the alien that runs everything right now? What's his name? He dresses like a spaceman.
Sorry, I was
in charge of the World Economic. Klaus Schwab.
Oh,
he runs everything. That's exactly what he wants, and what he wants is what he gets, because he is like Mr. Global. Mr. Global's right-hand man. It's running everything.
What is his name? It's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. Anyways, he went from wearing a suit and tie to wearing this kind of space-aged space garb all the time when he's doing things. This is what – nobody – it's boring. It's economics.
Carl Schwab.
Yes. He looks like he's from the World Federation, Galactic Federation, that speaks in a funny German accent. And no one pays attention to, but this is what happens behind the scenes with the think tanks and whatnot. But this economic.
Yeah, he's probably an actual Nazi.
Yeah. He sounds like.
But okay, I don't want to keep calling you caller. What is your name? I kind of like the family aspect here.
My name is John. You can call me John. Hi.
John. Okay.
You can call me John. Great. I'm glad you called.
But John, okay,
very
so like to your point, you're absolutely right about that, about how this is going to be a big deal soon. But, you know, I guess for the last, you know, I guess half a decade or so, maybe a little more, I've been really working towards people need to walk, you know, raising awareness that people need to walk away from this monetary system and start doing it with cooperation, you know, take back resources first, which is why, you know, this kind of stuff is important when we talk about Twitter. Is because how are we supposed to know what to do? How are we supposed to know how to defeat these people if we can't control the resource of news? You know, I started with food, but food, news, and health are really the things that we need to focus on if we're going to win, if we're going to survive what they've got planned for us. And so in my opinion, like, I know a lot of people are scared about money going away. I'm not. Just because I know that we can do it better. You know, this whole minority controlling the majority of people thing, it never succeeds, no matter what system we're looking at. When a hand, you know, a handful of people control the power of the world, you know, it's always going to be corrupted. It's always going to work against the people. And so, you know, for me and my family, you know, we're not going to starve to death. We've got, and a lot of people will, unfortunately, and that's so sad, which is why I'm trying to get people to take back 3 resources first, you know, so you can survive long enough to know how to survive without money, without, you know, this kind of controlled currency, which is our government, you know, that's the currency that we use is actually, a conductor to keep people enslaved, to keep people attached to this system. And so, and I know that money is a necessary evil right now. I totally understand that. But on the other hand, I also know that the sooner it goes away, the better it will be for humanity. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm glad that you brought up the whole food subject. I mean, I think we have to learn how to get down to basics, and food is probably the most essential. I don't think people see how important it is right now because they're so abundant in it, but they don't know that food right now is abundant in preservatives and dangerous things, and I think we should get down to the basics. We should understand food, and we should learn how to eat in moderation, as well as learn how to grow our own foods, and I think that's very important. Now your point about the money is, it's coming. No matter, it's coming. We just gonna have to accept it. I think that's what you were trying to say. We just have to accept that this is what's going to be coming. It's the future, and we just got to be more careful on what we do, the steps that we take. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, well, I do. This is coming, but the only caveat is that I don't think we have to accept it. I don't think we have to accept these awful consequences that they're going to throw at us by, you know, being able to take away our money if we say the wrong thing on social media, right? What I'm saying is that we withdraw our consent from the system that's kept us enslaved for so long, and we find another way, you know, like the, if, you know, I, like, let's say I am a dog walker. I walk 5 people's dogs in a day. I can trade my services for something else in our community. It's a barter system. It's very basic, but it's basically like this, a system that we can adopt right away. You know, the infrastructure is already there. Like, somebody already knows how to control the traffic lights. You know, somebody already knows how to you know, perform heart surgery. You know, some people already know how to grow food, no matter where they are. Like, where I live in San Diego, so we're going to be fine with food. We live in Eden. I have multi-year tomato bushes. I've got a tomato, like a legit tomato forest growing in my backyard. We're going to be okay with food. We can grow food on the side of the road. But, you know, in colder places like Elizabeth, you know, lives in the Chicago area. It's like, okay, so what happens during the winter? How do you feed everybody in the winter without relying on, you know, this kind of stuff? But you know what? I bet you somebody in Elizabeth's town already knows how to do it, already knows how to grow it indoors, already knows how they could sustain an entire community during the winter. And be fine. So that's really what I'm suggesting, is that know that it's coming. There's no way that we're really going to stop this thing from coming. What I'm suggesting is that we withdraw our consent and go a different way and use our currency. And we are electrical beings. We're magnetic. We're all of these things that they harvest off of us. And if we could just take that energy and use it to better our communities with the talent and knowledge that we already know, we could abolish this whole system, and it wouldn't matter if it's coming, if nobody participates in it.
Well, I agree with you there, but you've got the social – it's the – oh, God – Everyone's going to get a $1,000 check. What's that called?
Yeah, that's what's going to keep us attached to the system, for sure.
They are going to create a two-class system. Those who will stay in the system and be given, here's your living wage. Here's your a living wage check. You live this way, and we pay for everything. And then there's going to be another group of a community that we want a little more out of life, and we don't want to participate. We do not comply. And we're going to have two different well, they're not even going to be thriving. You're going to have the medical marijuana, the free McDonald's delivered to your home, and the cable TV, people that don't want to participate in anything but be taken care of, and then those who want to thrive and have a self-sufficient, productive life that might even include arts and creativity, music and crafts and bringing back, you know, candle making and, pottery along with fine art, fine cuisine, you know, from your organic gardens. It's going to be, I think two different communities are going to sprout out of this because they're throwing money at their method of enslavement. And there's going to be a vast group of people that are going to just be complacent and take it. And we're always going to have a constant battle between this. Do you see that or not? What do you think, John?
I definitely think that the classes are going to be separated. I know that the those right now that are consuming media, what I mean by that is those that are constantly in fashion. You know, they know what's the latest word to use, the latest clothes to wear, the latest cars. Those people are going to be the first to die. I believe that the ones that can look at an animal and decide if that animal is a tasty animal or how to cook that animal and look at an animal and look at it like food, as well as like go out in the wild and know where to forage, what's the proper mushroom to eat, the berries. Those people are going to be the ones that survive in the future. If there is this division that comes, I think that it's going to come where there's a big decision, whether we live in this new digital world or whether we decide not to live in it. Where we fight back and say, you know what, I don't want to live in this world. I want my sovereignty. I want to be independent. I don't want everyone watching me so much. That's going to be the turning point. That might be the civil war. That might be a civil war. I don't know, but that's going to be a point that's coming where a big decision's being made. And if that
right.
decision falls on the side of the people, like that we don't want the government involved so much looking over us, If that's the way we go, then we're going to have to become more animalistic almost, you know, where we know how to forge. My cousins right now, they're the next generation.
Yeah.
They're young. They will not eat a crab apple. I was taking them fishing. They won't touch a worm. They won't eat, like, raspberries. Unless it comes from the supermarket, they will not eat it. And I'm shocked at the generation out right now. And I thought it was just them. I went to a school, and they said, no, the factory's next door. They have smoke and everything, that these berries, it's poisoning the berries. I'm like, what? But, yeah, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but, yeah.
No, you're totally making sense. I totally get it. Kind of what we – it's funny because – so I'm actually an original millennial, right? So in the first couple years of millennial title. And, and I was a liberal for a long time. I live in a liberal city. I live in a liberal state. And so that's what we were taught. You know, I call it the neoliberal spell. When I first started to kind of like come around to maybe things aren't quite right with our food, we got, you know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, we have a little bit of land in coastal San Diego that is that we can farm. and we can have chickens, right? So we got chickens for the first time. And, you know, and we they were free ranged on about a quarter of an acre of a hillside. They ate bugs. They ate the things that they were supposed to eat. And we got our first eggs, and we were so happy, right? We got our, you know, we did this thing where, you know, we fed chickens and we got eggs, and it's like natural, right? And so I'm so excited to cook my first eggs, right? And I cracked the first one open, you know, in the frying pan. And it's this dark, like almost like neon burnt orange color, right, of the yolk. And I'm like, God, what did I do wrong? You know, I've never seen an egg that looked like this before. So I look it up on the Google machine, and apparently that's what a, you know, a free-ranged, grass-fed egg is supposed to look like. And I have this almost like coming to Jesus moment that, like, my whole generation has no idea what food is even supposed to look like. And so, you know, since then, it's kind of been my mission to, like, get people to see what's going on with our food and how we have no idea what it's supposed to look like, how – you know, they're going to, you know, like your nephews, like we're going to go to grocery stores and trust that food when it's probably impregnated with all kinds of GMOs, yet we don't trust ourselves to eat anything that we grow. And, you know, and that is, it seems to be like, I guess, even more perpetuated in the next generations, past millennials, that, that not only is it, store-bought the way to go, but, you know, the growing it yourself thing is unhealthy. You can't, you know, you basically, they're trying to, like, brainwash us to think that growing our own food is somehow unhealthy.
Yeah, I lost you.
No worries. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Like I was done with my thought, and then my bird started chirping,
gotcha.
So I had to yell at him.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm not gonna yell. That yes, there's an entire generation of children that won't eat anything if it's not a Happy Meal or comes from, you know, the right place. And no, they wouldn't eat anything. You know, we were always putting things in our mouths. It was like, don't eat that; it will poison you. And it was like, oh no. Eating berries and grass and weeds all the time. And I don't know what it is other than perhaps the intense marketing of the commercials that have affected the children. And then the constant fear porn of the environmental climate
exactly.
And what. And yeah, and they've, you know.
All part of the neoliberal spell.
The big global cabal that, you know, here, let's make them sick and make them feel like they need to go to someone to make them better. They are poisoning our skies with chemicals, and they can manipulate the allergies. They could call them allergies. They could call them the flu. Now they can call it the deadly whatever variant. But it's all something that makes you sick. It's an environmental thing. They can even, with the allergy season they've been spraying, they make you not like being outside, and they've, you know, put it upon the plants that are making you sick. And I'm like, how long? I'm thinking to myself, how long have they been actually spraying stuff in the sky? They've been able to do this since the Vietnam War. And I don't know that allergies were a thing. This is a new kind of a concept. And they've slowly made us where we are afraid and at the word I'm looking for, you know, the outside is our enemy now if you've got allergies. And it's like, or they demonize nature with the chemicals and how the chemicals make us feel. And it has worked, and it's like, it's an evil mind fuck of what they've been doing to us for a very long time. To take away that natural thing that kids have where, you know, yeah, maybe when I was a kid, I didn't like worms either or fish, you know, but anything my folks would cook, I'd be like, oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm going to take that back. I was a picky eater, too. I think that maybe that comes with being a kid. But no, I do have to take that back. There's A lot of things I wouldn't try.
I know people that are on welfare, and I know for a fact that those that are receiving, like, food stamps, they don't get a lot of money in food stamps. I think the people that I know, they're getting, like, $250 or something like that per month. And in all honesty,
yes,
that's not a lot of money. That's not. So yes, I've been noticing carefully that the majority of people that are on food stamps are overweight. They're very overweight.
Yeah.
Usually at the first of the month when I go to a Walmart or my grocery store or supermarket,
I
see people with two or three carts full of food, and I know that they haven't been eating for weeks, you know, or something like that. That's why they're loading up so much. And in their carts, I see all cheap foods, the non-organic, cheap processed foods, because it's cheap. And the reason why they're overweight is because they're eating that type of food, the non-organic, the process, all that. It's cheap, and it's affecting them by their weight. And you can see it in their weight. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous to eat that type of food.
It is.
You can see it in a lot of different ways, like 9-year-olds getting period because they eat so many hormones and chickens. You know what I mean? Like, it's very prevalent.
Mm-hmm. And diabetes because of a poor diet. Yeah, and it is. It's very sad. And they just, you know, we weren't as out of shape and as unhealthy as we are now, I want to say 30 years ago. There was a few people that were, like, really obese. They had a thyroid problem, we'd say. But now everyone looks like, and I'm going to make all kinds of friends, the Cabbage Patch people. It's like, what? And it's they introduced all the GMOs into these foods, too. And even into our good, you know, if you can't afford to pay the high-end price for non-GMO organic vegetables, you have GMOs in you. And it's changed our bodies. Our bodies are just not what the human body used to look like. And I can see the difference between someone who comes from another country. They have that physique that we used to have all over the place. And they got the muscle tone, and they've got healthy-looking bodies. The American public, we just don't.
Right, and we're, you know, sedentary. John, let me just ask you.
And especially the poor are really targeted with that. And the same thing here. The first of the month, it's because they got their check. And that, you know, they're limited. A lot of them are taking taxis. They don't have cars. So, and they're loading up, and it is all crappy, horrible food because that's what they're going after because it, number one, tastes good to them. Number two, it's cheap. You know, those places also have vegetables and whatnot, but they're going towards yucky food, and it's like, it's sad. It's sad, sad.
So I don't know if you guys heard, but John, what state are you in?
I'm in New York. The worst state that you could probably live in right now. It's either New York or California.
Yeah, I know. I'm number two, pal. I'm number two.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry for you, and I'm pretty sure you feel sorry for me, too.
Well, we got
both of our states.
We got Illinois, New York, and California. They have targeted the entire country.
Yeah, I think we got 1, 2, 3 here.
Yeah, boom, boom, boom. The whole country is, like, invaded with horrible governors and ways of life and how do you cope, John? What are your coping skills to get around all of this during the day?
A lot of the times, because I'm surrounded by liberals, the majority of the people here in New York think, like, how the narrative on the media tells them to think, and they speak that way. And to get over it, I listen to shows like I'll listen to your show, and then, okay, I feel good because there are other people that think like me, and I don't feel alone, okay, and I'm not this weirdo, you know, type thing, and it makes me feel comfortable, and I think that's probably the only way I get through all this. It's the only way, because I'm seeing something that I don't understand why my friends and people around me don't see. Why can't they get it that they're being fed junk, both mentally and physically, and sometimes I think I'm crazy, you know, but then I listen to your show and I'm brought back down to reality. So the real reality, not some fake reality.
You're
I
not crazy. You're blessed.
That's the best compliment I've gotten all week. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, keep it up.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you. You're blessed. You're blessed with a mind that can see. Your third eye is open. I think it is go back to the, we're living in times of biblical prophecy being fulfilled where, the wheat will be separated from the chaff. And there's a definite separation between how people are living and seeing things. And it's really doesn't go even, I want to say spiritual, but there's a huge divide in how people are perceiving things. And they're going off the cliff. They're just following the lemmings off the cliff into the ocean and not thinking enough to look up and what's everybody else doing. Or is you dare to be an independent thinker and not go with the crowd who's not thinking or watching where they're going. And they're just reacting to emotions and we're being just pummeled with, propaganda, how to feel, who to hate this week. It's like George Orwell's 5 minutes of hate. Who are you going to hate? And if it's not, Trump supporters or Putin and the Ukraine, it goes on and on and on. It's just, it's unbelievable. It's like not that many people pull back. And there's a lot here that do. Because when this all started with the COVID thing, I didn't even correlate the two together. There were a lot of parents walking around with their children. And I'm like, doesn't anybody work anymore? My gosh. But they actually decided to live a different way and not put their kids back into school. And they decided to, they work home and whatnot, and they actually are pulling away from this. And it's like, there's a lot of people here in my community that just, don't watch TV and they're not participating. They see what's happening. They don't like it, and they're not going to. They're creating their own reality.
That's amazing.
I think it is amazing. You're the only one. It's like, just kind of look around and see really what's going on, because I bet you have more allies than you would think, and if you're just probably driving by them and not talking to them.
I was talking to this old man one day. And we were talking about current events, and the old man says to me, like, how are you, why are you so concerned with what's happening overseas? In my day, all we worried about was a 3-mile radius, like who got robbed down the street or what happened to the house down the street. These days, it seems like your generation is constantly worried about things that are out of your reach. And I kind of agree with him on that. I think the majority of people these days listen to the media so much that they're concerned about things that they shouldn't be concerned about. You should be concerned about your neighborhood. That's the real concern. Not about this global warming thing. That's not of your concern. You need to learn how to live in your area. That's the big deal right there. And I think a lot of us are listening to too much news, too much media, and dealing with things that we shouldn't be dealing with. We shouldn't be worried about. That's my, I kind of agree with that old time.
You're absolutely right. Old people are smart. We start with our immediate, take care of your immediate family. That's your main concern. And it used to, thing I heard when I was a kid was, don't worry about what they're doing. If they ran off a cliff, would you jump with them? It was kind of like, no, in your lane over here, little girl, this is what we do here. And we really kind of need to get back to that where, if your home is nice and happy and content, your world is good. And until it... our big thing is we're all waiting for, the government to come barreling through and kick our doors down. But until that happens, your own reality is your creation. Your home is your castle. I think.
Can I ask you a question? You have brought up biblical, and I don't know how deep you go into this, but I was speaking with a friend the other day about the mark of the beast. If you don't have the mark of the beast, you cannot buy, sell, or trade unless you have it.
my friend told me that to get the mark of the beast, you have to acknowledge the beast. So meaning you have to acknowledge that this is coming from an evil source, the money that you're using. You have to acknowledge that before you get the mark. Now, I think that they were right on that, but at the same time, when they were bringing up that topic, I questioned them, like, so if the mark of the beast is out, does that mean that the beast is out then? If we're receiving the mark of the beast, does that mean that the beast is alive? Does that mean that the Antichrist is there, basically? So for us to use the mark of the beast, there must be an Antichrist that's alive. And we have to acknowledge the Antichrist is real. So my question is, do you think that when the Antichrist comes, that being is going to say, I am the Antichrist? And a bunch of people are going to accept that person as
you know,
their new God.
Right. The scripture referred to the mark of the beast. In the Bible, they referred to the beast as being political entities. And you have the church, so to speak, the Vatican, and then you have the governments, and it was referring to those entities. I think the Antichrist, the spirit of the world, is more so the Antichrist is what my take on the Bible is. But it's funny how it actually you can see it play out. You know, if you don't take, and if we were right there, where if you don't take the vaccine and you can't get your card to enter a store to buy food, you cannot buy or trade without the mark of the beast. It's like, oh, my goodness. There's even a scripture in, I believe it's Chronicles or Corinthians, where it actually says, do not let yourself be masked. Do not wear a mask. And it was like, holy cow, they couldn't have been more plain. It was kind of, you do not, this was the scripture I used all the time. I'm not participating in this demonic ritual, fear and control. We couldn't be more closely to allegorically living out the actual last days. And it even says that, you know, it would be so bad that women would be, oh God, would there be, I don't want to misquote scripture, but I don't think that it's literal, the Antichrist. Everybody's looking for it. They thought Obama was the Antichrist, or, you know, I don't think it's one person. I think it's more of the rulers of the world, the spirits of the world we're living under. A godless, the Antichrist is in the opposition to God. And we certainly are living in a godless society right now. Where, here, who would have thought that I would be changing Liz Cheney? But she get up and gave a great speech about the Democrats and how she's going to fight against them because they're pushing for a mass genocide of babies in hospitals right now with their new bill, where it's the afterbirth abortion. And I thought, you know, you've redeemed yourself a little bit in my eyes, because these are the important things we should be fighting. Is
I think that
we
was,
have our society.
Tulsi, wasn't it?
What?
Was it Tulsi?
No, I actually saw Liz Cheney do a speech about this. And I thought, you know,
Cheney.
It's a little too late. You know, because this has been going on for a long time, but we live in a
society
where...
Before we get on to politics, can I give my answer to his biblical question?
Sure.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, hi. Okay, so first of all, it's not... The Antichrist is not going to present itself as something that is satanic. It's not. It's going to present itself in anything other than what it is, and it's going to accuse anybody of God around it of being the Antichrist, in my opinion. And the proof of it is in the Bible, when you know, in the end times, when Jesus is walking the earth, when he's come back, you know, there's a scripture that says, "Lord, Lord, have I not, you know, cast out many devils in your name? Have I not performed many, you know, miracles? And Jesus says, get away from me, you workers of iniquity. I know you not. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of people that Jesus turns away from in this book that, you know, that claim to have lived an honest, God-fearing, you know, life, God-exalting life. And that's really the biggest danger of living in this upside-down world that we talked about earlier, where black is white, you know, left is right, you know, up is down, is that a lot of people are going to get confused, and they're going to take this mark of the beast, and they're going to take it as a sign of you know, being the savior of other people, and they're going to take it willingly and you know, agree to it wholeheartedly, and really, you know, understand that they're deep down that they're doing the right thing. See, I don't really think that hell is this fire and brimstone place. I think it's a separation from God. And so, you know, when people are in hell, they're not going to know why they're in hell. It's just this separation from God. They're going to live their whole, you know, eternal life with this idea that they did it right. And they'll never understand what they did wrong, in my opinion. I hope I'm wrong, by the way. There's a lot of people who are never going to acknowledge the fact that they did it wrong. And that's why there's going to be so many willing participants of the Mark of the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Neil. It specifically talks about this Antichrist, like, performing miracles, you know, doing all these great works in the name of Jesus or Yeshua. And interestingly, we talk about them a bit sometimes, recently on this show, and they own what they call, well, they have the Lucifer telescope in Arizona, owned by the Pope. And they also own a supercomputer in Brussels called the Beast. And when you look into this beast, it is how they run their financial system. The beast is what they enter all of our social security numbers and birth certificates for everybody in the entire world. They enter, you know, like all of these numbers when they're born, and it keeps a record of all the people. And they use this beast supercomputer to trade everybody internationally with each other, right, which is how they make a lot of their fiat currency, because we are their assets. And it's pretty fascinating.
Yes,
and so, you know, like, and right. And so an Antichrist is anything that opposes Christ, right? And so I think that there are many of them, and not just one. But I also think that their entire, like, economic financial system is this, you know, like, Antichrist beast system. And they have to tell us what they're doing, right? Because they still have to follow the natural law the same way that we do. They just look for loopholes, and then they try to get us to go along with them to create a ability and do different things. You know, but they have to tell us. And I personally believe that that's why they named the supercomputer the Beast, right? Because everybody's, like, waiting for this beast to show up. You know that it's already been here. And I've seen some compelling part of the beast. You know, I mean, definitely part of that system. But, you know, like, I don't know exactly what part of the beast is. The vaccine would make sense. But in all of these prophecies, it talks about this fork in the road that really we're at right now. You know, and the wheat will be separated from the chaff, and the people will separate from each other. And there will be two earths, you know, like two ways of being, whatever, you know, the Hopi concept. And there are some people that talk about, like, a third and fifth dimension, you know, but whatever you choose to call it, even the Bible, you know, says that a new earth will be created and that, you know, the meek shall inherit that. So the people have the power, but should not use it for harm. And so anyway, you know, I think that,
that we are at that fork in the road, right? And we just decide we're going to follow governments and corporations masquerading as governments and these celebrities, or are we going to choose to follow the creator, we call the creator, you know, and like follow that path that is a narrow path, we're told, and is not an easy path, you know, but is the righteous one. And so I'm not trying to like teach anybody, but I just, interesting, you know, and I know that we all want to like save our friends and family, and we want them to see what we see, and it's really frustrating because they don't see it. And it's sometimes it's like they cannot hear or see us, you know, but we really have to be like careful, not in our pursuit of trying to save these people and to show them, to not like get stuck with them, you know, not to condemn anyone, because I want everybody to reach the same like beautiful destination, you know, but out of respecting their sovereignty, they get to choose that, not me. But anyway, you know, like we have to be kind of careful, like when in our pursuit of helping them, that we don't, you know, get ourselves stuck, because we won't be told the day or the hour, but, you know, like we know you either get yourself like stuck in a hole or whatever hell is, or you ascend up through a portal, you know, and you go to this new earth.
I totally agree.
Good point.
Interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But
I also would like to just point out very quickly that the Hopi prophecies are the only ones that only prophecy that follows the tomes that talk about how men are going to try to be women and vice versa.
Interesting.
Wow. Really?
Yes,
that
a
is part of their prophecy.
Our
that's
Lakota
incredible because that's basically
about the same thing, but not in the same way.
Incredible because that's basically what's going on right now, where it seems like they're trying to make men very feministic these days. Really weird. I go to the gym and I'm seeing more homosexuals there. It's just weird how the behavior has been changed. And it's weird that you said that is part of the prophecy. I really believe we are living in Revelations right now. It's just my question is what chapter we are in. That's what I thought.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter what chapter we're in because we read the end and we win,
right.
You know, so
exactly.
There's that.
God wins. But yet, you know, I wasn't going to go into politics. I was going to go into how far away from God we've fallen, and the Antichrist is permeating the whole spirit of the world where we are fighting over killing babies. That's like, wow. You know,
over whether we have the right to kill babies.
Yeah. Then that's where we are. And it's like, wow. I'm just, you know, I can't believe that this is a fight. And that's how, to me, the Antichrist is here because this is happening. And this is really,
Moloch is a thing.
And this is now where you pick your sides. You pick your sides. And, you know, either you want to be on the wrong side or the right side. And that will be your decision. You're given that right to make that decision. But I think we're right there. We are living in prophecy being fulfilled right now. And you're absolutely right. You know the end. The ending has been already foretold. And you know, if we're seeing prophecy fulfilled in front of our eyes, you know that the ending is, it's not going to be changed. I think we had a conversation once where you can change it, and it's like, I don't think we can change. You know, they want to manipulate. They want to even, like, mock us with, you know, using prophecy and using, like, the vaccine had Luciferian was put into the name of the vaccine. The beast that you know, Lily was talking about. They are mocking prophecy.
They're laughing
in our face.
For sure.
But, you know, we get the last laugh because they
win. Yeah, because we win. So we already know that. We already won. That's, you know, It is, I guess, relevant to talk about where we are in Revelation, but we already know that we won. So, you know, whatever we can do now to help, you know, I liked, John, earlier when you said that, you know, it used to be that we cared about a 3-mile radius. And I think that we really do need to take more ownership of that because, you know, I know that there's a 3-mile radius around me that's going to have food. And we'll always have food. We'll have enough food for our neighbors. We'll be able, you know, there's not going to be a Mad Max situation where I live because we can grow food year round, you know. So that's what I've been working on. And I've been, you know, I guess the gospel, according to Danielle, that's going to be written about this time is that my contribution is preparing, you know, as many people as I can to worry about their 3-mile surroundings, to make sure that, you know, that the basic resources are covered in every community, you know, and we're not at the end of the book. We're getting very close. We still have time. We can still prepare for this. This could be generations away for all we know, you know, because spiritual things are not, we like to put, you know, the limited understanding human beings that we are, like to put numbers on things, timing, and time is a very physical thing. You know, spirit is not. And so what we have to do is exactly what we're called to do at this moment, you know, by God. And right now, mine is giving, you know, setting up the architecture, the outline, the roadmap for people to take back these resources of food, news, and health. There's so many more that we have to take back. But if we're going to win, we have to, one, make sure that we can communicate with each other. No, actually, number one, we have to make sure we can eat. So, you know, drop what you're doing right now and make sure your community can eat or find somebody and elevate them in your community who can do that. Two, make sure that we can get the information out to people. And three, restore our health by separating from this system that's keeping us sick and reliant.
And, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. The meek are those that are teachable, those that are willing to open up and learn. And I think you're helping to fulfill prophecy right there because you're giving knowledge to people. And that is life-saving knowledge. So.
And so are you, Elizabeth. That's why we're doing this together. And John, you know, I'm sure you are too. That's why you're listening. That's why you're interacting with this show. You know, just keep those things in the back of your mind. Make sure your family can eat. Make sure that you, you know, your 3-mile radius is protected. Even, you know, and you know what? Everybody has to come to this fork in the, you know, the road. That maybe our community isn't safe for us to continue. Maybe we have to go somewhere else. Like for me in San Diego, I've, you know, come to this realization several times where we probably should just, you know, jump ship and run. But my family is multi-generational.
Run
California.
To
where exactly?
We all are,
get out of
here's
the
thing. Is,
I don't know, but I think
road,
that at this point I'm going to stay
road,
and fight.
Well, see, the road would be, you know, will be very few and less traveled. Well, not that many people are going to go down that fork. And you're going to have little small communities, and we'll find each other. You know, we find each other through, you know, these type of shows, but, you know that you're not alone. There are more people out there that feel the same way you do, and we will gravitate towards each other. But look what happened with Peggy Hall. She started having freedom flights during the pandemic. They get pilots together that would take people where they needed to go without the vaccine. And then they got the homeschooling with mothers. And you've got, you know, communities of small businesses that, what did she call them, freedom? Can't remember. But it was kind of like, you know what? We're not going to be part of your society of vaccinated people. We're building our own communities. And they started popping up, and they're thriving. And that's kind of like what we're going to do is you build
sure
your community where you are.
You know, there's a lot of people that left New York, but there's a lot of people that are still there. And you guys are going to you're going to meet up. You're going to meet up. And you're going to be your own little tribe, you know.
I think that you are the first person to have ever said something positive when I brought up Revelation. But by you saying that, it doesn't matter what chapter we're in. In the end, we are going to win. That's the first time ever I heard that, and that blows my mind. I'm thankful to hear that because it does make sense. It doesn't really matter what's going on. We're just going to win in the end.
God wins.
Precisely.
Yeah, and we know how to. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you called in and you were able to get a little inspiration because it makes spread that.
Because we get
you know?
A lot of naysayers who call in, right? Don't we? Like, we get a lot. Like,
oh,
there's a lot
true.
Of.
Yeah.
Guest ratio. I think a lot of people are like, well, what happens if your farm gets taken over by Mad Max? You know, not to say anything bad about that caller, but, like, it's very much, like, pessimistic. You know, I'm going to go live in the woods and not cook anything with seasoning and huddle for warmth and stay away from civilization. It's like, well, what if we have time? You know we win. What if we have time? And what if we can fix it?
What if we're smarter, you know? And it's kind of like you create your own reality. It's like, shut the TV off. What kind of good day are you going to have? It's a wonderful day. I turn on the classical music, and it's kind of like the dystopian nightmare is gone because it's beautiful out, and I'm having a nice day. So it's kind of like you don't worry
exactly.
about what might happen.
And I would like
happen.
To just differentiate between, like, having a – you know, a blasé-faire attitude, like, God wins, I don't have to do anything. No, you have to do things.
Everything
not you in particular,
everything.
And I'm not talking about one person, I'm talking about all of us. You know, we win, but it's going to take a whole lot of work to change what's going on right now. And it's going to take a whole lot of industries and a whole lot of cooperation. But, you know, in the end, we do win. And so, like, that's why I'm not really, like, phased by the naysayers as much, although it is energy draining. I just know
yes.
that, like, I was set on this path a long, long, long time ago. I had no idea it would lead me to be in this place where I'm hosting a radio show and running for political offices. But I know that, you know, all things work for the good who love God and are called according to his purpose. And I'm living proof of that. And I know we win in the end. So that has, you know, that's the movement that I'm hoping to start or join, you know, because it's not
right.
like a place where I'm trying to, you know, be a leader. I'm just trying to lead by example. And I know that we can do this. So.
No, I don't think this is a unique thought. I think that it's more of a, but how do we do this? You know, there's a lot of people that would like to, but how do we actually make this work? And that's where you just start little at a time. You know, in my area, we have tons of people that have chickens. Everybody, it's not like only a few crazy people have chickens. Everybody has chickens. You know, out of the necessity of the
crazy
fact that
crazy people have chickens too. Let's say that.
It used to always be crazy cat people, crazy people have chickens. But they had to make ordinances of how many chickens you could have. And how far away from the street you can have them. And it's kind of like everybody's kind of like playing the game, and they're everywhere. You know, and the big thing is, how do you keep the big, huge birds away from eating your little birds? Those are the survival things that have gone on since the dawn of time. You had the predators that come in and take your food. You got to get back to that.
Like the bobcat, Bobby?
Well, like the turkey vultures everywhere. They're everywhere. Even and I'm like, yeah, because I've even seen them, you know, feasting upon chickens. And that's back to, you know, you have to, they've started to build barns and bring all their you know, chicken coops. And you know, it's back to you are the one that protects your homestead. Like, we're so used
yes.
to having the police and everybody in the fire department, everybody take care of us. And we were seeing in real time that they are they're all on strike. You know, they're like, well, that's a civil matter. We're not here for that. What are you here for, really?
Exactly.
They never answer the question. And so we have to figure out how to take care of ourselves as a society again, and we're doing it.
Yes.
And,
but
and
that's the plan anyway.
And that's a story that's never talked about anywhere. We're actually doing it, and
we're talking about it here.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Seeds of Change every Sunday from 3 to 6 on Freedomizer Radio. I'm sorry. I was seeing a commercial. But seriously, that's what we've talked about. That's why this show is Seeds of Change. It's because I think that food should be first. And, I'm human and I am a sinner. But every day I try to be to be better and to follow God and what he wants us to do. And it's actually pretty pretty interesting that the closer you get to, you know, these biblical thoughts of self-reliance and things like that is one step closer to us winning. I don't know how many of us out there are doing this, but I guess if you want to say anything about Jesus Christ is when he was here, he was very anti-government. He was very anti the system taking control of the citizens. You know, he was and what did he do? He flipped over the money changing tables, right? So he went after the government of the day, which was the Jews, and that is not an anti-Semitic. That's a historical fact, right? But the Pharisees made the laws of the time. And Jesus was a action that was happening in the government of the time and the corruption of the currency. Those were the things that he was fighting against. And so that's why, John, I hope you you didn't think I was advocating for this digital currency. I just know that when Jesus was asked about the currency of the day, he said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's." And so, to me,
God what is God's. Render to Caesar Caesar's, but render to God God's. You don't follow Caesar's law if it goes in contradiction to God's law.
Exactly.
That money changing thing was an extortion racket in order for the religious folks at the time had to bring X amount of doves and goats and whatever in order to cleanse themselves of their sins, and it became an extortion racket. And it was kind of like, no, I am the end. I am the law. I'm coming to lay down my life to take away your sins. All of this is gone. And you render to Caesar Caesar's, render to God God. And that is, it can't be any easier to play out when Caesar's laws conflict with God's laws, you go God's way. And we can't look at all the laws that are going, what we should be doing as good human beings, not just Christians, you don't kill your babies. It's easy breezy. That's where stand. You don't extort the homeless. You help your fellow man. It is.
Well, and that has a lot to do with the fact that we don't follow jubilees, right? Even in Levitical law, it says that that debt can only last 7 years. Servants can only be indentured for 7 years. Prisoners can only be imprisoned for 7 years. There are exceptions to that rule, but those people are put to death. Prison people for more than 7 years because, things like pedophiles, gone. Murder, same thing. They weren't in prison because they were just executed, right? So, but that would fix a lot of the homelessness problem. In particular, and the prison population, people being in prison for so long, If we went back to Levitical law, that would be fixed. I'm not suggesting every Levitical law needs to be followed to this day. Jesus died to forgive certain, you know, I've not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. So the things of him being a sacrifice, hence the sacrifice laws being null and void because we already have a sacrifice, right? We have an eternal
right.
sacrifice. We don't have to do any sacrifice anymore. So I'm not suggesting that all Levitical law is still valid, but I think things like the Jubilee is still absolutely valid. It should be. I think things like gleaning, where, know, you say you've got you're a farmer and you have an orchard grove, whatever, you know, orange grove, let's say, and there's a big wind that comes through and knocks a bunch of oranges off onto the floor, onto the ground. They were not allowed to pick those up. Those had to be left there for people who needed food. So, like, that was a,
well, they also,
you know,
there was a certain amount of feet from the edge of the field in that was left for.
Yeah. And you have to let the land rest for a certain amount, you know, every so
yeah.
often, every few years,
so,
I believe, according to
Jubilee.
There
were social nets put in place back then, and we have social nets here. You know, the debt slave industry we have is out of control. They tried to relieve that a little bit with the bankruptcy thing, remember? And then they changed those bankruptcy
laws. Yeah, except for student loans.
And they took you right back into perpetual, you know, debt slaves.
The other huge industry, which is the prison industrial complex, right? So
yeah.
you take these people, you put them in jail for, you know, 30, 50, life in prison. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You can only be a slave. That is actually, you know, against the Jubilee Levitical laws.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that kind of slavery is really what's gotten us in this position, you know, where the Antichrist can rise. You know, and so, you know, we know why it's coming. We know why it's here even. But, you know, I'm just saying that we already won. And so if we start going back to and creating a society that was based on these Levitical laws that had not been, you know, fulfilled, then our societies right off the bat would be a much better place.
Absolutely. And, you know, to get back to, you know, natural law and – there was a wonderful book written around the time that they wrote the Constitution. It was called The Rights of Man by Thomas Paine. And there's just 10 little principles that basically kind of based upon the Ten Commandments a little bit, but
yes.
basic human freedoms. And if we could somehow get rid of all of these ridiculous laws that bind us from doing the basic common sense things and just having a basic, free, self-sufficient life, we would be, you know, able to have an amazing renaissance because we wouldn't be taxed with the burden of society and the rat race that they call it and working for nothing. There's a lot of things
mm-hmm.
to look into, but it's funny how they're all kind of based upon the Hammurabi Code, which is based upon the Ten Commandments. The founders of this country
mm-hmm.
had the basic rights of man, and then we've taken and just – this is where the Antichrist comes in, when they took and bastardized all of the freedoms that mankind had. The Antichrist was in play. That's my take
mm-hmm.
on that. And it even gotten worse on that.
Yes.
But it only comes with your consent. You know?
Yes. Yep. They have to tell us. That's what this, you know, that's another big theme of this whole show is that they have to tell us what they're doing. And we tell you what they're doing. And so does the Bible. And so does the, I call it the tomes. You know, I don't want to keep going back to the Bible because there's all kinds of, you know, the Samaritan text had, you know, the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was Noah's Ark, right? It's the tomes.
Right.
It's all of these cultures that could not have known about each other under our current history couldn't have.
Right.
And they all have the same story. They all have the same truth.
Ancient books. Ancient books of knowledge. For those that get a little, you know, like they don't want to talk religion or whatever in the Bible, they're all ancient books of knowledge. And I think that's where we, when they, you know, here, the base, they don't even want you to know what you think. Talk about, get back to the censorship we were talking about. When they've stolen our ancient knowledge from us, and then they refuse to let us speak.
We live in the dark ages.
We got a problem here. We need to pull back and not consent and live like an upright man, knowing that they have freedoms. And that's
sovereign.
Where your works are blessed and God wins. That's
we have to be sovereign.
My closing
exactly.
Thought.
Amen.
Yeah. And we are, knowing that we already are. We're made in God's image. You know, we were made.
We are
created
with amnesia, to quote Graham Hancock. We already are. We just have to remember where we came from. We have to remember
and who we are.
Who we are.
Remember
exactly,
who
and
we
take
are.
Ownership of it. And we'll do that. I'm not sure on what timeline, on God's timeline, because no man shall know the day or the hour, right? So it's all going to be on God's timeline. But in the meantime, I'm just going to do what I'm told by my Father God in heaven and know that I'm doing everything that I possibly can for us to win this. And we do, which takes the pressure off.
Absolutely. And it's happening. I mean, even because I know a lot of people do squirm about the religion thing. It's happening in a worldwide awakening of what is right and what is wrong. You look around the whole world and people are rising up against this tyrannical oppression that is worldwide. And humanity is waking up to a big, we are not going to take this anymore. And they're shutting down that voice. They don't want us to hear about Belgium or Venezuela or Australia or
France,
the Dutch armies, or Canada right now. They don't want any, or Iran, or anywhere.
Cleveland, Ohio.
They don't want us to hear it because there is strength in numbers. There's where you can encourage other people. When you find there's one other person that feels the same way, if not an entire nation of people who feel the same way, there's your power, is your self-esteem.
I think all we need is 3%, and I think we're there. So we actually are there at the moment. We're at 30 seconds till the end of the show. So, John, thank you so much for being here. Call back anytime. We love your feedback. We love your input. Lily, thank you for being here. Elizabeth, as always, you're my rock.
I love you,
please,
baby.
Share this if you can.
Love you.
Love you all.
Good
love you,
guys. Great week. Hang in there, Jen. We love you.